Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 5th of the second month, 2026, and it is a Thursday evening. The time is 7 minutes past the hour of 9 p.m. Ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 083-288-401. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our reading week. Our week of reading, our week of reading, our week of reading. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a reading corner on Pulling Heartstrings, and that's what we're going to be doing for the week. We're going to be reading, but it's not just going to be ordinary reading, right? It is going to be the art of reading without reading while you're listening and you're listening to a book, because many of us don't actually have access to the books. Many of us don't have access to the libraries. Many of us don't have that kind of access. It is what it is, you know? And I was thinking, how about we take it up a notch? So yesterday we read The Alchemist, right? We didn't finish it. And that is your homework, because there's only one chapter left to finishing The Alchemist. And that is now your responsibility as the audience, as the listener, as the reader, to continue. You must now, Chomi, go and finish that book, because I've given you the whole entire creme de la creme, right? So it is up to you now to finish. Hasho. Alrighty. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, today we started yesterday with The Alchemist, and now we're moving on. This whole entire week, we're going to be reading, and then we're going to learn lessons. So also, do not be shy. Do not be a stranger when it comes to listening and hearing something that intrigues you, something that you would actually like to talk about, because We are all reading, right? We're all reading. And if something is nice, especially like yesterday when we were listening to The Alchemist, there was a part where it caught my attention a lot, right? The part where this guy is in a strange land and he decides that he's going to give all his money. He's going to show a stranger all his money and going to give the stranger all his money, regardless of regardless of the fact that he doesn't know him, you know? And he felt and deemed that it would be rude for him to say, hi, so I don't think I did a good idea. It was a good idea to actually ask to give you my money. Can you please give my money back? He thought it would be rude. And many of us are actually raised like that. And where did it get him? Nowhere. To be honest, it got him nowhere in that particular, situation and scenario, because then he got robbed. He got robbed because he looked and looked and looked, and he thought that this thief was his new friend and he was going to help him get to the pyramids, and he didn't. And that is just, human nature. It's just the crookish ways of people. It's the crookish ways of how people do things, even though it's not the correct way. It's not the way that we would like, but it is how it's done. And with that, there's nothing else we can do. There's nothing we can say much, except the fact that we have to learn from these lessons. And also part of the other lessons was, when his whole entire quest was, to finally impress the guy that buys the sheep, huh? To impress the guy that buys the sheep's daughter, right? Because she couldn't read, and she was enchanted by the fact that, like, he's traveled so many lands and he has read so many books, and he was like mesmerized by this. But then eventually throughout the story, he does go to the desert, and then he does go and meet a woman, Fatima. Now, in this, right, there is, it is such an innocent book, because it can be read out loud and Quran will not come and kill us because there's inappropriate what. There's no inappropriate what in this. It's basically strictly just life stories, you know, a life story. And he finally meets Fatima. And Fatima is a woman of the desert. So now a woman of the desert, right? This would be like us categorizing women in contemporary times as a village woman or a corporate hun or a slave queen or a what or a what. There's specific things that these types of women appreciate. And in this case, Fatima was a desert woman. So she appreciated a man that would go out on his quest to find his personal ledger. Like he said, his personal ledger would be his purpose and his heart's contentment and what would make him ideally happy and come back to her to the desert, you know? And in some parts of the story, he also then wanted to change his mind. Like, he doesn't want to leave Fatima. He's so in love. And, oh, baby. And, oh, yeah, you're the love of my life. I love you so much. Oh, I can't leave you. And, right? And he was now told by the alchemist that it's okay for you to want to stay, but for you to want to stay would mean that you would give up on your dreams. And how many of us sacrifice things in the name of love? How many of us sacrifice things in the name of love, sacrifice opportunities in the name of what will people say, what will people do, and what if? Many of us are not living to our full potential because we are afraid of the tomorrow. And we are afraid of taking steps. And this was part of his fears as well. So he decided that he's going to up away. There we go. Up away. And he went to explain this to Fatima. And Fatima understood why. Because she was a woman of the desert. And women of the desert are married to men of the desert. Men of the desert go out for their personal ledgers. They go out for their quests in life. They must go out there and look for their quests in life. And also understanding that if you're holding somebody back from their destiny and somebody back from the life that they want to live in the name of love, right? It's not everything that works out. It's not everything that's meant to be. And he saw this a lot alongside his story, because his story was one of anger, bitterness. It was also filled with rage. It was also filled with moments. But then luckily he had eventually made it through. And that is where the story stops. So part of the story is that he finally does actually get his treasure. He finally goes to the mountains and he finally gets it. And then there's another plot twist to The Alchemist. Please stay tuned as we proceed.
E filosisho o talikulandula kona ave wayuk. E kwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atupa teleko mesho kwashili palekolo asfika mafio per dola e miliona omlongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja o makwafo unamiti e nashane filosisho lo paulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yo shilongo, shijoshi topo washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule o minute disyonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo ponje yo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will about you.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen. So as we proceed, so he does finally get to, his personal ledger. He does finally achieve everything that he wanted. But then there's a plot twist to it. And that's the plot twist that you have to go and figure out. So mainly when I've read The Alchemist, right? The motivation that I got from the book was that there are no limitations to life, and you must learn to listen to your intuition and to the world around you. They are signs and they are omens and they are indications, because we are not in this world alone. We are surrounded by so many things, and not everything is bad. There are also good things out there. And if we can learn to just listen to Mother Nature, if we can learn to listen to our intuition, if we can learn to listen to us for a change, there are so many things that we could achieve. But also, it also taught me that dwelling on on problems and dwelling on past heartaches, right, was not something that was beautiful. It wasn't something that was worth holding on to. It is better to let it go and see exactly where you are at right now. Because you might be complaining that, oh my goodness, so I didn't get into varsity and they don't want to accept me, yet I'm an A-star student and I'm smart and. But maybe that's not your destiny and maybe that's not your path. Maybe you're not even supposed to be a doctor. Maybe you're supposed to be a chartered accountant. Maybe you're supposed to be something else. And also, even if, right, you are going to be a doctor, maybe you just need this year to go around the system and get in there. There is no such thing as coincidences, and there is a lesson in everything. And talking about lessons, ladies and gentlemen, we are almost diving deep into the world of reading. So we are going to read Solomon's secret code. Now, Solomon is King Solomon himself. You know, King Solomon, the one that said, okay, let's cut the baby in half. Yeah. That one. Yeah. We're going to listen, but we are not going to use it for evil. We're going to use it for absolute wonders and beauty. So for me, the matriarch, let's dive into our second book for the week. And it is Solomon's Secret Code. And ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of the material that we are playing. We are strictly only using it for reading, for learning, for entertainment, for enhancing our knowledge purposes, right? And we are not saying we are the owners. We're just saying that, hey, I found something intriguing and I would like to share with you. All right, let's dive.
Introduction, the richest man in history. Forget the Forbes list for a moment. Forget Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the tech giants of Silicon Valley. If we were to adjust King Solomon's fortune to today's inflation, historians and economists estimate that his net worth would exceed $2.2 trillion. Imagine a wealth so obscene that silver was considered as common as stones. Imagine silver in the streets of Jerusalem being common. Imagine a commercial network that connected continents, a fleet of ships that brought gold from Ophir every 3 years, and a reputation so magnetic that kings from far-off nations traveled for months just to hear his voice. The official story, you were told, says he was just blessed. They told you that he asked for wisdom, and God gave him wealth, end of story. But the mystery schools, the Freemasons, the Kabbalists, and the Alchemists have kept a different version for 3,000 years. They know that Solomon's prosperity was not an accident, nor a passive miracle. It was the result of a specific code today. Solomon possessed an advanced mental operating system. He understood the metaphysical laws that govern matter and applied them with surgical precision. Legend says that Solomon possessed a magic ring with which he controlled demons and forced them to build his temple. Today we are going to decode that metaphor for your own life. We will discover that those demons are not horned monsters, but the chaotic forces of your own psyche. Your fear, your procrastination, your anger, and your uncontrolled desire. Solomon's secret was not eliminating his demons, but subduing them and putting them to work. The average man is a slave to his impulses. The king ruled them. Average people serve their urges. King Solomon made his impulses build his empire. This audiobook is not a religious text. It is a manual for reality engineering. We are going to dust off the 10 master keys that turned a mortal man into an eternal legend. We will talk about how to structure your mind, the temple, to manifest power. We will discuss how to use the power of your word to decree reality, the tongue of the birds, and how to generate a personal magnetism capable of attracting opportunities without chasing them, the Sheba effect. You do not need royal blood to use this code. You only need the will to stop being a subject of your circumstances in the world. You must stop being a subject to become the sovereign of your own destiny. The throne is empty, and it is waiting for you. Prepare to receive the inheritance. The knowledge of the ancients is now in your hands, and the path to your own kingdom begins with the first step into the wisdom of the king. Step forward and claim your power. Chapter 1. The Ring of Power, Mental Mastery. Close your eyes and imagine the scene. We are in the Judean desert 3,000 years ago. King Solomon is sitting on his ivory throne covered in gold. Around him the air vibrates. In front of him there are no ambassadors, no generals, no priests. In front of him there are shadows, there are creatures of smoke and fire today. These are beasts with eyes of coal, entities that represent chaos, destruction, unbridled lust and volcanic rage. They are the jinn. They are the demons of legend. Any other man would be trembling, or dead, or possessed. But Solomon is calm. His breathing is steady. His gaze is made of steel. He is the master of the moment. He raises his right hand. On his finger a ring shines, a ring with a geometric seal engraved, the Star of David, the hexagram, the union of heaven and earth. Seeing the ring, the beasts bow their heads. The chaos stops. The king speaks with a voice that is soft but immovable. Build my temple, and the beasts obey his command. The beasts, who by nature only know how to destroy, start cutting stones, smelting metals, and raising the most sacred building of antiquity. This is the legend. And for centuries, treasure hunters have turned heaven and earth seeking that physical ring. They believe that if they find the object, they will have the power. How naive! If you found Solomon's physical ring and put it on, nothing would happen. It would be just a piece of old metal on your finger. Because the ring of Solomon is not an object. The ring is a state of consciousness. The ring is the perfect metaphor for the sovereign will. Today we are going to deliver the ring to you. We are going to discover that the 72 demons of the Gotya do not live in hell. They live in your limbic system. They live in your subconscious. They are your addictions. It is your laziness. It is your fear of public speaking. It is your envy. It is your compulsive desire. The average man is a slave terrified by these demons. King Solomon is the tamer who uses them as pack animals to build his wealth. Welcome to the royal hierarchy. By subduing these internal forces, you stop being a victim of your impulses and become the architect of your own reality. The gold of your life will be forged by the very forces that once threatened to consume you. The anatomy of your demons. To dominate, you must first understand what you are dominating. Religion has taught you to fear your darkness. It has told you that your evil thoughts and low instincts are sins to eliminate. They taught you to pray for them to go away. They taught you to repress them, to hide them in the basement and pretend to be good. Solomon laughs at that. The secret code says, energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transformed. Your demons are pure energy. Think about it. How much energy does a man possessed by rage have? He is capable of lifting a car, of not sleeping, of working 20 hours straight, driven by resentment. It is nuclear force. How much energy does a man possessed by lust have? He is capable of crossing oceans, composing symphonies, or starting wars, all to conquer the object of his desire. How much energy does fear have? It makes you run faster than an Olympic athlete. Demons are the engine of the world. The problem is not the demons, it is that they are loose. The problem is that in your inner kingdom, the throne is empty. When there is no king, the demons take command. And a demon in command is a disaster. Rage in command becomes violence and prison. Lust in command becomes addiction and broken families. Fear in command becomes paralysis. Laziness in command becomes depression. Look at your life today. If you don't have the money you want, if you don't have the body you want, if you don't have the peace you want, it is not because you are bad. It is because there is a mutiny on board. There are parts of you, demons, that are sabotaging the king. You say, tomorrow I wake up at 6 to work on my project. At 6 the alarm goes off and a voice says, no, it's cold, sleep more, it's useless, and the demon of laziness speaks. And you obey the demon. You hand over the crown. You become its subject. Every time you break a promise to yourself, you are abdicating the throne. You are kissing the feet of the beast in your own house. The ring as technology of the will. What then is the ring? The ring represents the I am. It is the self-aware consciousness that separates itself from impulse. The animal is its impulses. The dog is hungry. The dog eats. The dog is angry. The dog bites. There is no distance. The king has impulses, but he is not his impulses. The ring is that distance. It is the ability to observe the demon shouting, I want sugar, and to say with absolute calm, I hear you, but the answer is no. Or better yet, I'm not going to give you sugar, but I am going to use that anxiety you feel to go for a run. Solomon's seal had the ineffable name of God engraved. This is the key of authority. That name is not a magic word like abracadabra. That name is the vibration of authority. When you put on the ring, you stop negotiating with your mind. Slaves negotiate. Kings decree. Look at your internal dialogue. Oh, I don't know if I should go to the gym. I'm tired. Maybe tomorrow. That is a committee of slaves. The king says, I am going to the gym. Period. There is no debate. The body may complain. The beast growls. But the body moves because the king has given an order. By exercising this sovereignty daily, the gold of the ring thickens, and the demons of doubt begin to understand that their master has finally returned home. Why you need demons, the secret of construction. Here comes the most controversial part of the Code of Solomon. Why did Solomon use demons to build the temple of God? Why didn't he use angels? Because angels do not have hands to carry stones. Angels are beings of light, of intellect, of pure ideas. They live in the world of abstract forms and high frequencies today. They are great for inspiring the design of the temple, the idea, the vision. But to move tons of physical rock, to sweat, to dig into the earth, to deal with the density of matter, you need brute force. You need the density of demons. You need the visceral impulse. You need the hunger and the fire of the lower realms. If you are a too spiritual person who represses all desires and only wants to be light, you will be very good at meditating, but you will probably be broke. You will have no thrusting force in the material world. To make money, which is dense matter, you need a bit of hunger. You need ambition, which is tamed greed. You need a bit of aggressiveness, which is channeled rage, to close deals and defend your boundaries. Solomon did not kill his demons. He tamed them. He took the demon of avarice and said, I like your hunger, but you're not going to steal. You're going to work to create the best trade system. You'll bring me gold under my rules. And avarice channeled became prosperity. He took the demon of pride and said, I like your desire to be great, but you're not going to humiliate others. You're going to build the most majestic temple so the world is amazed. You will seek excellence. And pride channeled became majesty. This is the alchemical transmutation. Do not throw your darkness in the trash. It is the fuel of your rocket. Coal is dirty, but if you burn it in the right boiler, it moves the train. Your traumatic past, your complexes, your wounds, your rage against the system, all of that is free atomic energy. The rich and wise man is not the one who has no shadow. It is the one who has put his shadow to work on the great work. By aligning your darkest drives with your highest vision, you create a synergy that the purely good or the purely evil can never achieve. You become a total being, a sovereign who rules both the heights of the spirit and the depths of the material world. The hexagram seal, as above, so below. The symbol on Solomon's ring is the six-pointed star, a triangle pointing up, fire, spirit, masculine, intertwined with a triangle pointing down, water, matter, feminine. It represents perfect balance. King Solomon is right in the middle. He is not just spirit, an ascetic monk who flees the world. He is a master of both. He is not just matter, a hedonistic barbarian slave to his pleasures. He is the bridge. He brings heaven down to earth. The ring reminds you that you have dual citizenship. You are a citizen of heaven, your mind is divine, and a citizen of earth, your body, is animal. Your job is to impose the law of heaven on the chaos of earth. That is dominion. Dominion is not tyranny, dominion is order. A garden without a gardener becomes a jungle of weeds. A mind without will becomes an asylum of worries. You are the gardener. The ring is your pruning shears. By maintaining this balance, you ensure that your empire is both prosperous and sacred. The test of the ring, resistance. Do you think it will be easy? The moment you decide to put on the ring, take command of your life, the demons will rebel. It is a systemic law. When the teacher enters the classroom, the children who were shouting and jumping on the desks do not sit immediately. At first, they shout louder to test the teacher's power. Do you really command, or are you an imposter? When you decide, I'm going to be rich, your internal demons of fear and doubt will shout, Who do you think you are? You're going to fail. It's dangerous. When you decide, I'm going to be healthy. The demon of gluttony will scream with an unbearable craving for sugar. They are testing you. They are testing the firmness of your ring. If you give in, if you say, well, just for today, the demons laugh. They know the king is weak. They know the ring is made of plastic. And next time, they will respect you even less. But if you stand firm, if you hold the gaze of the beast, you win. If you feel the desire to smoke or to procrastinate or to give up, and you observe it without moving, breathing with the calm of Solomon, the beast gets tired. The beast recognizes a superior vibration, and eventually the beast bows its head and lies at your feet. That is where you obtain the power of the ancients. Each temptation overcome does not disappear. It is integrated into you as strength of character. Every time you do what you should do instead of what you want to do, you are polishing the gold of your ring. The demons begin to work for you not out of love, but out of respect for the undeniable authority of your sovereign will. The brass vessel containment. Legend says Solomon enclosed the rebellious demons in brass vessels and sealed them with lead. This is a lesson in emotional containment. An emotion is like a gas. If you leave it free, it dissipates and does nothing, or it smells bad. If you enclose it in a cylinder, the vessel, and compress it, it becomes pressure. And pressure moves pistons. The weak man vents everything he feels. If he is angry, he shouts. If he is sad, he cries in public. If he is horny, he seeks immediate sex. He loses his pressure. He loses his power. He is a leaking boiler. Solomon teaches the art of silence and containment. You must contain the fire within. If you have a project, do not tell everyone. That releases the pressure. Shut up. Keep that energy in the vessel. Let the pressure rise until the only way to release it is to work on the project. If someone offends you, do not explode. That is weakness. Keep that offense in the vessel. Let it become a cold determination today. Let it become a cold determination to show the world who you are through your success. Silence accumulates power. The ring seals the vessel. By mastering the art of containment, you transform raw, chaotic emotion into a focused laser of intent that can pierce through any obstacle in the material world. You are the master. How to forge your ring today? You're not going to find the ring in an antique shop. You have to forge it in the fire of your daily routine. Here is the protocol to activate Chapter 1. 1. Identify your main demons. Do not call them problems. Give them a face. Is it Asmodeus, lust, immediate pleasure, preventing you from saving? Give them a name. Is it Belial, rebellion, laziness, preventing you from working? Is it Baal, pride, fragile ego, making you fight with everyone? Recognize them. Say, I see you. I know you're there. I know you have a lot of energy. 2. Separate yourself from them. Stop saying, I am lazy. Say, I feel the presence of laziness in my body. You are not laziness. You are the king observing a lazy subject. This dissociation is key. The king is not the peasant. 3. Give the command, the decree. When you feel the impulse, use the internal voice of command. It is not a hysterical shout. It is a dry, low, and final voice. No. Now we go to work. Get up. Without explanations. A king does not justify himself to his subjects. 4. Assign a task, sublimation. Do not leave the demon idle. Give it work. If you have a lot of anxiety, excess energy, do not try to calm down sitting on the sofa. Anxiety will eat you. Use that nervous energy to clean the house or to do 100 push-ups. Tell anxiety, do you want to move? Fine, let's move by building something. Turn the shaking into action. By directing the energy of your demons toward constructive goals, you fulfill the alchemical promise. You turn the lead of your impulses into the gold of your character and your destiny. You are now Solomon. The danger of losing the ring. There is a story in the Talmud where Solomon, drunk with power, takes off the ring to show it to the demon Asmodeus. In that instant, Asmodeus grows until he touches the sky, grabs Solomon, and throws him 400 miles away, usurping his throne and his appearance. Solomon spent years wandering as a beggar in the world. He went around saying, I am the king, and everyone took him for a madman. The lesson is brutal. Power is not permanent. Power depends on your vigilance. The moment you take off the ring, lose consciousness, become arrogant, think you no longer need discipline, The beast takes control and the fall is very hard. Many successful men have lost their empires because once at the top, they took off the ring. They let themselves be carried away by drugs, scandal, or laziness, and their own demons, who once worked for them, ate them alive. The price of the ring is eternal vigilance. Keep your ring polished. Keep your throne guarded. Chapter 2, The Inner Temple, Order and Structure. Imagine for a moment that you are the universe. You are an infinite, generous, and abundant force that wants to pour energy, money, love, opportunities onto its creatures. You look down and see two containers. The first is a chalice of pure gold. It is clean, shiny, without cracks, placed on a firm pedestal. Its structure is perfect. The second is a broken plastic trash can. It is dirty, full of holes, wobbling on a floor full of debris and mud. In which of the two would you pour your most precious wine? The answer is obvious. If you pour the wine into the broken bucket, it will be lost. It would be a waste. The universe does not waste energy, it seeks a vessel. King Solomon understood this better than anyone. Before asking for wealth, before asking for power over nations, Solomon dedicated himself to one single thing: building the container. He spent 7 years building the Temple of Jerusalem. It was not just any construction. It was a work of obsession with detail. It was built for God. Cedar wood from Lebanon, gold from Ophir, stones carved with millimeter precision, curtains of fine linen. Everything was measured. Everything was in its place. There was a hierarchical order, the atrium, the holy place, and the holy of holies. Why so much effort? Because Solomon knew an unbreakable law. God does not inhabit chaos. Chaos is the absence of structure. Wealth is crystallized structure. Welcome to Chapter 2. Today we are going to stop talking about dreams and start talking about blueprints. We are going to discover why your life is a financial and emotional disaster. The reason is not that you lack talent. It is that your internal structure has collapsed. You are a building in ruins asking for luxury furniture to be installed. Today we are going to take the broom, the level, and the plumb line. We are going to clean the site. We are going to build the inner temple where, inevitably, gold will come to reside. By creating order within, you force the external world to mirror that same harmony. The principle of correspondence, as within, so without. At the entrance of the mystery temples, the hermetic maxim was written, "As above, so below, as within, so without." Your external reality, your bank account, your body, your house, is an exact mirror of your internal reality, your mind, your emotions, your discipline. If your room is messy, your mind is messy. It is a direct reflection. If your car is full of trash, your finances are full of small leaks and toxic debts. If your body is flabby and neglected, your will is flabby and neglected. The average man believes he can have a millionaire's mind while living in a beggar's environment. He tells himself, "When I have money, I will order my life." This is a lie. The Code of Solomon says, lies. You will never have money thinking like that. Money does not come to put your life in order. Money comes to amplify what you already are. If you are messy and I give you $1 million, you will be a messy person with 1 million larger problems. You will spend it all on chaos and be broke in 2 years. To activate the code, you must reverse the process. You must order your life now with the resources you have, as if you were already the king. You must prepare the house for the visit of Queen Abundance. If the queen arrives and sees that your house smells bad and the sheets are dirty, she will turn around and leave with someone else. The holiness of silence, the rule of iron tools. There is a fascinating detail in the Bible about the construction of the temple. It says that the stones were brought already carved from the quarry, so that neither hammers nor axes nor any iron tool was heard in the temple while it was being built. The temple was built in silence. This is a brutal metaphor for mental noise. You cannot build a life of greatness in the middle of constant noise. We live in the age of distraction. You have your phone ringing every 5 minutes, the TV on in the background, social media notifications, loud music. Your mind is a construction site full of hammering and shouting. In that environment, you cannot hear intuition. Solomon knew that wisdom requires acoustic and mental silence. To build your inner temple, you need to establish zero noise zones. You need moments of deep work. If you want to create a business or design a strategy, you have to turn off the world. Iron, technology, noise, must not be heard in the holy place. Silence is power. Real wealth is created in the silence of absolute concentration. Noise is for the poor. The poor live with the TV on. The rich live in silent houses with quiet gardens because they know that their attention is the most expensive asset they have. How much noise is in your life? That noise consists of the cracks where your energy escapes. The materials, cedar and gold, the quality. Solomon did not use cheap pine. He used cedar of Lebanon. He did not use bronze for the sanctuary. He used pure gold. The code says, quality attracts quality. There is a spiritual disease called bargain mentality. It is the obsession with the cheap, the discount, the free, the good, pretty, and cheap. This mentality is a trap. When you buy cheap and bad things, you are sending a powerful message to your subconscious. I do not deserve the best. I deserve trash. I am poor. And your subconscious, obediently, ensures that you remain poor. Building your temple means raising your standards. It does not mean spending money you don't have on stupid luxury. That is vanity, not quality. It means it is better to have one pair of excellent leather shoes that last 10 years and make you walk like a king than to have 10 pairs of plastic shoes that hurt you and break in 3 months. It means it is better to eat a little real nutritious food than to gorge on processed junk. It is about soul. It means surrounding yourself with objects that have a soul, that are well made. When you touch quality, your vibration rises. You feel worthy. Solomon surrounded his life with aesthetic excellence. Beauty is not superficial. Beauty is the language of God. If your environment is ugly, your thoughts will be ugly, depressing, and cheap. Start eliminating the ugly from your life. Throw away pens that don't write. Throw away socks with holes. Throw away chipped plates. Make space for gold. By honoring your environment, you signal to the universe that you are a worthy steward of its finest resources, and more excellence will naturally begin to flow toward your life. The atrium, the holy and the most holy, hierarchy of access. The temple was not a space open to the public. It had levels of access. The atrium, outer courtyard, where the people could enter. The holy place, where only the priests entered. The most holy place, Sancta Sanctorum, where only the high priest entered once a year, and where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. You are the temple, and your problem is that you let everyone into the most holy place. You let anyone enter your mind and shit in it. You let toxic news into your most holy place before breakfast. You let the gossip of your co-workers into your heart. You let the opinions of irrelevant people hurt you. You have no walls today. You have no filters. You are a public square, not a temple. The Code of Solomon demands sacred boundaries. In the atrium, your superficial social life, be kind to everyone. In the holy place, your inner circle, only let people who contribute to you enter. In the most holy place, only you and the divine enter. And no one else has the right to have an opinion on your value, your purpose, or your deepest dreams. Protect your access. Put guards at the doors. The Queen of Sheba was breathless seeing the order of Solomon's servants. Each one knew their place. If you don't put people in their place, they will put you in theirs, which is usually below. The architecture of habit, the foundations. Her temple does not stand on grass, it stands on deep stone foundations. Your foundations are your habits. Motivation is like the wind, it comes and goes. Habit is like stone, it stays and holds the weight. Solomon did not wake up and say, "What do I feel like doing today?" A king has an agenda. A king has rituals and a clear plan. The liturgy of the temple was precise. Sacrifices at such a time, incense at such a time, lights at such a time. Without that routine, the temple loses its sacred function. Do you have a personal liturgy, or do you wake up and react to what the day throws at you? The code invites you to design your day as if it were a ceremony. Morning ritual. Cleaning, silence, planning, preparing the instrument. Work. Ritual. Blocks of intense concentration. Placing stones. Night ritual. Reflection. Gratitude. Rest. Closing the doors. If you have no structure, you are spilled water. Structure gives you form. And only what has form can be filled by the Spirit. To observe truly rich and powerful people. They all have strict routines. They all protect their time with ferocity. It's not that they are boring. It's that they are architects. By mastering your daily schedule, you build a fortress that prevents the chaos of the world from eroding your focus and stealing your most precious resource, time. The body, the first temple. Before building the temple of stone, you have to honor the temple of flesh, your body. It is the only vehicle you have to experience wealth in this dimension. Solomon spoke of health as marrow to the bones. If your body is intoxicated, tired, inflamed, and weak, your mind will be cloudy. You cannot think high today. You cannot have high-frequency thoughts in a low-frequency body. It is basic physics. Solomon's posture radiated authority. How is your posture? Are you hunched over, looking at the ground, with slumped shoulders? That is the posture of defeat. Biologically, it tells your brain to lower testosterone and raise cortisol, the stress hormone. Straighten up. Lift your chin. Open your chest. Take up space. Treat your body as if it were a king's horse, not a pack mule. Give it the best fuel, keep it clean, train it to be strong. A strong spirit in a weak body is a lion in a glass cage. It will end up breaking it. Your physical vitality is the engine of your royal manifestation. The law of the vacuum cleaning. To build the temple, Mount Moriah first had to be cleared. You cannot build the new over the old without cleaning. Many of you are accumulating. You accumulate old clothes you don't use. You accumulate papers. You accumulate emails. You accumulate grudges. You accumulate limiting beliefs. It is a burden that slows you down. The universe hates a vacuum, but loves to fill vacuums. If your cup is full of dirty water, God cannot pour wine. You have to empty the cup. Apply Solomon's minimalism. Solomon had a lot, but everything he had possessed a purpose and beauty. He had no clutter. Make a purge this weekend. Throw away what is broken. Be ruthless. Give away what you don't use. Clean the corners. When you free up physical space, mental space is freed up. You feel a weight lifted off your shoulders. That lightness is the sign that you are ready to receive. If you cling to the old out of fear of lack, you are decreeing lack. Faith is throwing away the old knowing that the new will come. The aesthetics of authority. Let's talk about how you dress. It's not about fashion. It's about semiotics, the language of signs. The priests of the temple had specific garments for honor and beauty. When you dress, you are costuming yourself as who you want to be. If you work in pajamas from home, you are telling your brain today is not an important day. If you don't shower until noon, you tell your brain, today is not important, we are not important. And your brain acts accordingly. It produces mediocre work. Solomon always dressed as a king, even if he was alone in his chambers. Dress for the position you want, not the one you have. Iron your shirt. Groom yourself. Fragrance yourself. It is not vanity. It is respect for the temple. When you look in the mirror and see yourself impeccable, your self-image rises. You respect yourself more. And when you respect yourself, the world respects you. Money flees from careless people because they broadcast the message, I am not responsible. Be impeccable in your presence. The battle against entropy. The universe tends toward chaos, entropy. If you leave a house alone for a year, it fills with dust and falls apart. If you leave a garden alone, it fills with weeds. Order is not natural. Order is an act of continuous will. Maintaining the temple requires constant energy. You have to clean every day. Discipline is daily. It is exhausting, yes, but it is the price of greatness. Poverty is the natural state of inaction. Wealth is the artificial state of ordered action. Solomon did not build the temple and go to sleep. He established a perpetual maintenance system. You have to fight the entropy of your life. Every day is a new battle for order. The moment you stop rowing, the current takes you backward toward chaos. Accept that maintenance is part of success. Making the bed is not a household chore. It is the first victory of the day against entropy. By conquering the small details of your environment, you train your will to conquer the large challenges of your destiny. The Ark of the Covenant, the central purpose. Finally, an empty temple is just a museum. What made Solomon's temple powerful was not the gold, nor the cedar, nor the stones. It was what was at the center, the Ark of the Covenant. And inside the Ark, the tablets of the law. What is at the center of your life? Why do you want money? Why do you want power? Answer honestly. If the answer is to buy things or to be envied, your temple is empty. It is a shell. You need a sacred purpose, something bigger than your ego. Solomon built the temple for the name of YHWH, to bring light to the world, to govern with justice. When your ambition is aligned with service, your structure is indestructible. The universe protects those who work for the plan. If you only work for yourself, you are alone. If you work for something greater, you have infinite backing. Define your arc. What is your covenant? What will you defend until death? Put that in the center of your mind and everything else will revolve around it like planets. How to build your temple today? Here is the architectural protocol to activate Chapter 2. 1. The Chaos Purge. Choose one area, your desk, your car, or your closet. Order it to the level of an operating room. Throw away the excess. Feel how the energy changes. That is the feeling of the temple. Expand it little by little to your entire house and your life. 2. Establish silence. Buy noise-canceling headphones or find a quiet corner. Dedicate 1 hour a day to sacred work without a phone, without internet, without interruptions. Protect that hour as if your life depended on it, because your wealth does. 3. Define your zones. Stop telling your dreams to people in the atrium. Identify who your priests are, mentors, loyal partners, and give them access. Close the door to emotional tourists. 4. Raise your aesthetics. Throw away your old underwear. Buy a nice coffee mug for work. Small quality details remind you that you are a king in training. 5. Daily liturgy. Write down your ideal routine. Repetition creates habit. Habit creates character. Character creates destiny. By laying these stones today, you ensure that the structure of your life is strong enough to hold the immense wealth and power that the Code of Solomon is about to bring into your reality. Your temple is rising. Prepare for the manifestation. Chapter 3. The Tongue of the Birds, the Power of the Word. Legend has it that King Solomon possessed a gift that no other monarch has ever had. It was said that he knew the tongue of the birds. He could sit in the gardens of his palace and converse with hoopoes, eagles, and doves. They brought him secrets from the far corners of the world. He was a master of high-frequency communication. It was also said that he had power over the ruach, the wind, that he could command the winds to carry his ships or bring rain. The modern rational mind thinks fairy tales, Dr. Doolittle, fantasy. But you who are decoding the code already know that in sacred texts, the literal is the shell and the symbolic is the nut. It is a key. Solomon was not chirping with sparrows. The tongue of the birds is an ancient code for high frequency. Birds fly high. They see the world from above. They represent elevated thought, intuition, and the truths of the spirit. And wind, ruach in Hebrew, is the same word used for spirit and for breath. It is the life force. What the legend is telling you is that Solomon mastered the art of the spoken word. He understood that the human voice is not just a mechanism to transmit information. He understood that the voice is shaped wind. It is spirit converted into sound waves. And those sound waves have the capacity to reorganize matter. Sound is the tool. In Genesis, God creates the world by speaking, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. It does not say that God thought, nor that God moved his hands. It says that God said. Sound is the primal tool of construction, and you, made in the image and likeness of the Creator, have that same power installed in your throat. But you use it like a child playing with a loaded gun. You spend the day shooting yourself in the foot. Welcome to Chapter 3. Today we are going to learn divine grammar. We are going to discover that poverty, illness, and loneliness are often results of a bad conversation. We are going to seal your lips and teach you to speak the decree, abracadabra. I create while I speak. Everyone knows the magic word par excellence, abracadabra. We see it in cheap magic shows with rabbits and top hats, but its origin is Aramaic, the tongue spoken by Jesus, and very close to Solomon's Hebrew. It comes from the phrase avracadabra, which literally means I create as I speak, or I will create while I speak. This is the master key. Reality is not solid. Reality is vibration. Quantum physics confirms it. Everything is atoms vibrating at different frequencies. And what is the voice? vibration. Have you ever seen a cymatics experiment? Sand is placed on a metal plate and a sound frequency is applied. The sand organizes into perfect patterns. Sound orders matter. When you speak, you are emitting a frequency that orders the sand of your reality. If your frequency is, I am a disaster, I never have money, I am tired, life is shit. What geometric pattern do you think you are creating in your life? You are creating a pattern of chaos, lack and fatigue. It is a law. And then you are surprised when your life is chaotic, poor and fatiguing. You say, you see, it's true, I am poor. The Code of Solomon tells you, you do not describe it because it is true. It is true because you describe it. You have confused the cause with the effect. You believe you talk about your problems because they exist. But the metaphysical truth is that problems persist because you keep talking about them. You are giving them your breath, ruach. You are giving them life. If you stopped talking about them, if you withdrew your attention and your word, they would die of energetic starvation. Your silence is the death of the obstacle and the birth of power. The complaint syndrome. Involuntary black magic. Most people practice black magic against themselves 24 hours a day. It is called complaining. Complaining is the most perverse use of the power of the word. It is a negative decree repeated with emotion. I'm sick of my job. My partner is useless. The country is going to hell. I always get sick in winter. These are seeds. Analyze the phrase, I always get sick in winter. That is an order. You are telling your immune system, listen well. When December arrives, lower the defenses and let the virus in. It is what we always do. It is our identity. And your body, a faithful servant, obeys. And then you have the audacity to say how unlucky I am. It is not bad luck. It is cellular obedience to a royal mandate. King Solomon wrote, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Proverbs 18:21. Notice that it does not say some things. It says death and life. You can kill a relationship with words. You can kill a child's self-esteem. You can kill your own future with words. Or you can give life. You can resurrect someone's hope with a phrase. You can heal your body by speaking to it with love and authority. Every time you open your mouth, you are signing a contract with the universe. Are you signing contracts of wealth or of debt? Be careful with what you sign. The power of I am. The two most powerful words in the universe are I am, or I stay. In Hebrew, Eyeh, the name that God gave to himself before Moses. Anything you put after I am is a label that you stick onto your soul. The subconscious has no sense of humor. It does not understand irony. It only understands instructions and direct commands. If you say jokingly, haha, I am an idiot.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken Portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo Fat Cook Flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at Voermanbrock.com. We care.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
My friend.
I always lose my keys. Your subconscious registers. Data, we are idiots. Instruction, lose the keys. And it will make sure that you lose your keys next time to maintain consistency with your decree. The Code of Solomon demands extreme vigilance with the I am. Never label yourself poorly. Never under any circumstances finish that phrase with something you do not want to be. It is forbidden to say, I am poor. I am old. I am scatterbrained. I am shy. I am miserable. Change it. Even if at first you feel fake. I am in the process of generating wealth. I have a lot of energy. I am learning to concentrate. Do not lie. Do not say I am a millionaire if you have 5 euros, because your conscious mind will reject the lie. But use language to direct attention toward potential. Instead of, I have no money, which closes the door, say, I am looking for new sources of income, which opens the door. The second phrase is a path to the gold. The silence of Solomon, the golden box. If speech is silver, silence is gold. Solomon knew that power accumulates in silence. There is a hydraulic law in metaphysics. If you tell your plans ahead of time, they lose force. Imagine you have a great idea for a business. You feel a wonderful internal pressure. That pressure is the fuel to act. It is your steam engine. But you make the mistake of going to the bar with your friends and telling them everything. You explain the details, imagine the success, receive their applause or their criticism. When you go home, you feel deflated. You no longer feel like starting the work. Why? Because you have already lived the project through your mouth. Your brain has already received the dopamine of telling it, so it no longer needs the dopamine of doing it. You have ejaculated the energy through the mouth. The code of Solomon says, shut up. Keep your dreams in a golden box, locked with a key. Do not tell anyone except those who are going to actively help you build them. Do not seek external validation. Let the internal pressure grow, let it boil. Let the only way to release that energy be by building the empire in the real world. Let your results speak so loudly that you do not need to say a single word. The lion does not announce that it is going to hunt. It hunts. The dog barks. The king acts. The lie, the system virus. Why is it so important to tell the truth? It is not just a moral issue of being a good person. It is a structural issue of engineering. Your word is your tool of creation. It is your chisel. If you lie, you are nicking the chisel. If you say, I will arrive at 5 and you arrive at 5:15, you have broken the law of your own word. If you say, I will pay you tomorrow and you do not pay. If you say, I'm going to start the diet and you eat the pizza. You are teaching your own subconscious that your word is worth nothing. You are teaching it that your sound is noise, not law. Then, when one day you try to make a powerful decree, your subconscious laughs. I'm going to be rich. Or I'm healed. Your subconscious will tell you, yeah, right, just like you arrived at 5, just like you paid tomorrow, just like the diet, you are a liar, your word is garbage, and your decree will have no power, it will manifest nothing. But if you practice radical impeccability, things change. If you fulfill what you say, always whatever the cost, if you say I'm going and you go even if it rains fire, your subconscious begins to feel reverence for your word. It learns that what you say happens. Then, when the critical moment arrives and you say, let my will be done, the whole universe aligns to fulfill it. The wind and the sails, using the Ruach, legend says that Solomon traveled on a flying carpet propelled by the wind. The metaphor is clear. The wind, Ruach, spirit, carries you if you know how to set the sails. Your words are the sails. If you set the sails of I can't, the wind of life will push you backward. If you set the I am capable sails, it pushes you forward. The wind is neutral. It does not care where you are going. It only pushes. You are the captain who orients the sail with language. Look at how winners speak and how losers speak. The loser uses passive language. Let's see what happens. I hope I get lucky. They did this to me. He is a victim of the elements and the sea. The winner uses active language. I will make it happen. I am going to create the opportunity. I assume responsibility. I decide. He is the master of the elements. Change your grammar, and you will change your destiny. Eliminate the I have to slave obligation, and change it to I want, or I am going to, today. Listening to the birds' intuition. Let's go back to the birds. Speaking is projecting power, masculine. Listening is receiving power, feminine. Solomon did not just speak, he listened. He asked for a listening heart, Lev Shomea. Most people have so much noise in their own mouths and minds that they cannot hear the privileged information the universe whispers. The birds are those sudden ideas, those hunches, those subtle warnings. Do not sign that contract. Call this person now. Go the other way. They are high-frequency messages. They come fast and go fast like a sparrow. If you are shouting, complaining, or talking for the sake of talking, you scare the birds away. Silence them. Wisdom requires receptive stillness. In negotiations, the one who talks the most usually loses. The one who listens gathers information and understands the position of the other. Solomon listened to the two mothers before speaking. He listened to the wind before sailing. Learn to shut up. Learn to read the air of a room. Gossip, the poverty of the spirit. There is nothing that impoverishes faster than gossip. Speaking ill of others is ingesting poison while waiting for the other to die. When you criticize someone, you are focusing on the negative, the low, and the dirty. You are tuning your mental radio to the garbage FM frequency. And the universe brings more garbage to you. Furthermore, gossip destroys trust. If you speak ill of John with Peter, Peter knows you will speak ill of him with John. No one trusts state secrets or big business to a gossiper. Solomon surrounded himself with nobles and sages. The conversations at his table were about ideas, architecture, botany, ethics, and the future. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Great minds talk about ideas. Average minds talk about events. Small minds talk about people." If you want to live like a king, stop talking like a gossipy doorman. Elevate your conversation. If you have nothing good or useful to say, apply the code Golden Silence. It is the signature of the wise. Protocol the word diet 7 days. To activate Chapter 3, I propose an extreme challenge. A 7-day verbal detox. It is harder than any food fast. The rules. 1. Zero complaints. Forbidden to complain about weather, traffic, politics, or pain. 2. Zero gossip. Forbidden to talk about people not present. 3. Zero self-contempt. Forbidden to say how stupid I am. 4. Speak slowly. Before responding, pause for 2 seconds. Filter. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? What will happen? The first 2 days you will feel frustrated. You will realize that 90% of your habitual conversation is negative garbage. You will stay silent many times because you will not know what to say. Good. That silence is healing your throat. By the 3rd day you will feel an increase in physical energy. The energy you used to waste on complaints now stays inside you, available to create. By the 7th day, your word will have weight. People will listen with more attention. You will be seen as more regal, more solid. Power returns. The royal decree, scientific prayer. To close, let's talk about how to ask. Religion taught you to plead. Please, God, if you can, give me something. Gesetzes, that is beggar's language. It assumes that God is far away and that you do not deserve it. Solomon did not plead. Solomon made pacts and decrees. He spoke as one who already possessed the treasure. Scientific prayer does not ask for something to happen. It affirms that it is already happening in the spiritual plane and claims its manifestation in the physical plane. It is the difference between, "I hope I don't get wet," and, "I'm going to open the umbrella." Your affirmations must be in the present. Use the active voice. Not "I want to be rich," eternal future, but "I accept abundance now. My income grows every day. I am a magnet for money." Your current reality may contradict it. It doesn't matter. Physical reality is slow. The echo takes time to arrive. But if you keep the sound constant, the sand will eventually adopt the shape of your sound. Chapter 4. The Judgment of the Sword, Discernment. Jerusalem, 960 BC. The throne room is crowded. There is tension in the air. 2 women, prostitutes by profession, are screaming in front of the king. Both claim the same thing, a living baby. The story is sordid. Both gave birth 3 days apart. One of them, while sleeping, crushed her son and accidentally suffocated him in the night. Upon realizing this in the darkness, she switched the babies. She placed the corpse in the other woman's arms and stole the living one. Now, in the light of day, both swear by God that they are the true mother. There are no witnesses. There are no DNA tests. There are no security cameras. It is the word of one against the word of the other today. Both cry. Both seem sincere. The courtiers mutter, "It is an impossible case. How can a man know what goes on in the heart of a stranger?" Solomon, sitting on the throne, watches the scene with apparent boredom. He does not argue. He does not ask philosophical questions. He raises his hand and gives an order that chills the blood. Bring me a sword. The guard unsheathes the steel. The metallic sound cuts the air. Solomon says, Divide the living child in two, and give half to one and half to the other. The silence in the room is absolute. It is a monstrous order. Has the king gone mad? Is he going to murder an innocent to solve a legal dispute in his kingdom? In that second of terror, the truth comes to light. One of the women, the impostor, says with chilling coldness, Neither for me nor for you. Divide him. The other woman, the real mother, with her insides torn by love, throws herself to the floor and screams, Oh, my lord, give her the living child and do not kill him. She chooses love. She prefers to lose her son rather than see him die. She prefers that her enemy raise him rather than see his blood spilled. Solomon smiles. He has seen what he needed to see. He points to the second woman and says, Give the child to her, and do not kill him. She is his mother. This story hides the most potent secret, discernment. Solomon's sword was not for killing babies. It was a tool of psychological cutting. It was a pressure test designed to break masks and reveal the essence. The code says, Truth is always revealed under threat of loss. Welcome to Chapter 4. Today we are going to stop being naive. We are going to sharpen your mind until it cuts glass. We are going to learn to distinguish loyal partners from traitors, golden opportunities from pyramid schemes, and real love from narcissistic manipulation. Life is full of false mothers who want to steal your baby, your money, your energy, your time. You need a sword. You need to develop the vision that pierces through appearances. What is discernment, the X-ray vision? The biblical word for this is bina, understanding or discernment. It is not intellectual intelligence. There are people with an IQ of 150 who are scammed by the Nigerian prince trick. Discernment is visceral intelligence. It is the ability to see the intent behind the action. People lie. Words are cheap. Talk is just a distraction. Anyone can say, I love you, I am honest, or this business is safe. The naive person listens to the words and believes them. The naive person projects their own goodness onto others. Since I wouldn't lie, he won't lie either. That naivety is deadly. In the world of business and power, being naive is suicide. Solomon knew it. Solomon did not listen to the words. He listened to the vibration. He used the sword to provoke a reaction. Discernment is the art of asking uncomfortable questions, of setting sharp boundaries, and of observing how the other reacts. It is the ability to see the bone structure of reality beneath the skin of appearances and lies. The psychology of the impostor, envy. Let's analyze the false woman. Why did she agree to divide the child? Neither for me nor for you, divide him. This phrase summarizes the essence of envy. Envy does not want to have what you have. Envy wants you not to have it. The impostor knew the child was not hers, but her pain for having lost her own was so great. Her hatred toward the happy mother was so deep that she preferred total destruction rather than seeing the other win. This is vital. There are people who prefer to sink the ship with them inside rather than watch you be the captain. They exist in your office, they exist in your family. They are the energetic vampires of your world. They are the ones who tell you, I'm telling you for your own good that project is going to fail. They are the ones who, when you succeed, say, Yes, but you were lucky. They are the ones who sow doubt when you are happy. The Code of Solomon requires you to identify the false mother in your life. Who is willing to divide the child? Who prefers destructive conflict over a peaceful solution where you win? Those people are not forgiven. They are expelled from the kingdom. The sword serves to cut the umbilical cord with toxic people. Do not try to heal them. Do not try to understand them. They are agents of chaos. Cut them off. Protect your life force. The test of loss. How to detect the truth. How do we apply the judgment of Solomon in the 21st century? By using the threat of loss as a chemical reagent. Imagine you have a business partner who claims to be 100% committed to you. Everything is beautiful words, but you doubt. Take out the sword. Tell them, The situation has changed. I need to cut your pay. Tell them, To continue, I need you to reduce your salary by 50% for 3 months to reinvest in the company. If not, we have to close. Even if it isn't true, or even if it's a test. Observe the reaction. The true mother, the loyal partner, will say, "It's hard, but if it's to save the company, I'll do it. Let's move forward." The false mother, the mercenary, will say, "No way, that's not what we agreed. I'm leaving. Divide it." The truth comes out when you touch the pocket or the ego. Imagine you are meeting someone romantically. Everything is perfect. Take out the sword. Set a strong limit. Tell them no to see what happens in their mind. Tell them, "I am not going to have sex until there is a serious commitment," or, "I do not tolerate you shouting at me. If you do it one more time, I'm leaving." The manipulator will react with anger, guilt, or blackmail. "You are exaggerating. You don't love me." The real person will respect the limit. Never be afraid to test loyalty. Gold is not afraid of fire. Only pyrite, fool's gold, fears the crucible. If someone is offended because you put them to the test, it is because they knew they were going to fail. By testing the foundations now, you save yourself from a collapse later. A king only builds with materials that have proven their strength under pressure. Emotional detachment, the firm hand. To use the sword, Solomon had to do something very difficult. He had to be willing to kill the child. Let me explain. If Solomon had wavered, if his voice had trembled, if he had said, "Well, maybe we divide it," the test would not have worked. It had to seem real. There had to be a real risk of death. This requires coldness. In business and in life, the one who is willing to walk away from the negotiation table is the one who has the power. If you need the deal desperately, please don't kill the child. You are the weak party. You will be scammed. If you are willing to break the negotiation, bring me the sword. The other party will respect you. The Code of Solomon says, "Do not be attached to the result. You must love your project, yes, but you must be willing to sacrifice it rather than corrupt it. You must love your partner, yes, but you must be willing to be alone rather than lose your dignity." That willingness to die is what paradoxically gives things life. When the universe sees that you are not afraid to lose, it stops taking things away from you. Fear of loss is the signal that attracts predators. The security of the one who holds the sword frightens them away. By letting go of the outcome, you gain mastery over the process, and your authority becomes absolute and unquestionable. Discernment versus judgment. Be careful. Do not confuse discernment with moral judgment. Judgment says, "That person is bad." It comes from the ego. You feel superior. Discernment says, "That person is dangerous, toxic, incompatible with me." It comes from observation. It is neutral. Solomon did not hate the false woman. He just didn't give her the child. You don't need to hate scammers or liars. You just need to see them. Ah, you are a scorpion. It is your nature to sting. I'm not angry with you for being a scorpion, but I'm not going to let you into my bed. Discernment saves you much emotional energy. You stop wanting to change people. You simply classify them and act accordingly. Wolves are not invited to dinner with sheep. That is not being mean to the wolf. It is being responsible for the sheep. By removing the emotional charge from your observations, you see the world with a clarity that allows you to navigate the most dangerous waters with the calm of a king who knows exactly who is on his ship. Intuition, the edge of the sword. Where does discernment come from? It comes from Silence, Chapter 2, and Listening, Chapter 3. Your body knows the truth before your brain does. When you meet someone, sometimes you feel a contraction in your stomach, a coldness, a discomfort. But your rational mind says, "Don't be silly, he's very nice, he has good references." And you ignore your stomach. And 6 months later, you have been robbed. The Code of Solomon says, "The body does not lie. That visceral feeling is your ancient radar system detecting micro signals of danger that your conscious mind does not see." Solomon trusted his instinct more than apparent logic. He listened to his gut. If something smells bad, it is rotten. Do not try to convince yourself it is Roquefort cheese. It is trash. Sharpen your intuition. When you feel that red alert, stop. Do not sign. Do not commit. Take out the sword. Ask a difficult question. See what happens. Your internal compass is the most valuable tool for your survival and success. The sword against yourself, self-deception. The most painful use of the sword is against oneself. Because the biggest liar you will ever meet in your life is you. You lie to yourself about your habits. I'll quit whenever I want. You lie about your finances. It's an investment, not an expense. You lie about your relationships. He's going to change. It is a trap. Solomon, in his book Ecclesiastes, was brutally honest with himself. He admitted that all his wealth, his women, and his palaces were vanity. He applied the sword to his own ego. To activate the code, you have to be ruthless with your own excuses. Cut through your justifications. Why are you not rich? Don't say the economy. Say because I haven't known how to generate value or because I spend too much. Why are you fat? Don't say genetics. Say because I eat more than I burn. When you cut the lie with the sword of truth, it hurts. You bleed. But only then can you heal. The truth will set you free, but first it is going to make you very angry. Prudence, the shield. If the sword is the attack, active analysis, prudence is the defense. In Proverbs, Solomon repeats, "The simple believes everything, but the prudent looks well to his steps." Being prudent is not being fearful, it is being strategic. We live in the age of haste. Buy now, limited offer. Marry me, we are soulmates. It's a lie. Haste is the enemy of truth. Scammers always rush you. They want you to make the decision emotionally before your rational brain, your sword, wakes up. The code says, the king never runs. If someone pressures you to decide now, the answer is no. Give yourself time. Time is the acid that dissolves lies. It reveals all today. Lies do not stand the test of time. The truth does. If it is a good opportunity today, it will be tomorrow. If it isn't tomorrow, it was a trap today. Sleep on it. Consult with your pillow, your nightly counselor. The next day, with a cool head, you will see things you didn't see yesterday. Prudence ensures that your kingdom stands. Counselors, the multitude of sages. Solomon did not decide alone. In the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Even if you are the king, your vision is limited. You have blind spots. The arrogant man believes he knows everything. The wise man rents other people's brains. If you are going to make a big decision, look for your counselors and seek wisdom. But beware. Do not look for friends who agree with you, flatterers. Look for people with a sharp sword, critical people. People who will tell you, you are going to be wrong, and here is why. The devil's advocate is a king's best friend. Pay them to destroy your ideas. If your idea survives their attacks, then it is solid. If it breaks at the first criticism, they have saved you a fortune. Do not have an ego about your ideas. Let them be attacked. It is better for an idea to die in a meeting room than for you to die on the battlefield. By surrounding yourself with sharp minds, you multiply your own discernment and ensure the success of your reign. Protocol: How to sharpen your sword. To activate Chapter 4, we are going to train your discernment. 1. The power pause. Starting today, forbid yourself from saying yes immediately to any important proposal. Your default response must be, "Let me review it. I'll get back to you in 24 hours. That space of time gives you back the power. It cools the emotion. 2. The uncomfortable question. Get used to asking the question no one wants to ask. In a job interview, why did the last person in this position leave? In a sale, what are the defects of this product? In a date, what are you really looking for? Look them in the eye. The truth usually comes out in that microsecond. 3. The false mother. Analysis. Make a list of the 5 people closest to you. Ask yourself, if I had massive success tomorrow, who would genuinely be happy and who would feel envy? If I lost everything tomorrow, who would stay? Be honest. The answer will tell you who to invest in and who to protect yourself from in your life. 4. Kill hope. Be realistic. Hope is a bad business strategy. I hope he pays me. I hope it works. Eliminate hope. Look at the data. Has he paid before? Do the numbers work? Judge by facts, the past, not by promises, the future. By grounding your decisions in reality, you wield the sword of Solomon with lethal precision. Chapter 5, The Alchemy of Gold, The Energy of Money. In the first book of Kings, 10:14, there is a verse that has puzzled theologians and numerologists for centuries. It says, "The weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold, the number of the beast, the number of man, the number of carbon, 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 6 electrons, it is a sign. For the fearful religious mind, this is a sign of evil. For the alchemist who knows the code, this is a sign of absolute material mastery. Solomon was not spiritual in the sense of rejecting the world. Solomon was the master of matter. He understood that the physical world is made of carbon, and his mission was to spiritualize that matter. He aimed to convert the lead of raw existence into the gold of higher civilization. Those 666 talents, approximately 23 tons of gold per year, did not fall from the sky by miracle. They were the result of an economic alchemy. Solomon turned Israel, a small nation without great resources, into the financial center of the ancient world today. How did he do it? Not by chasing money, but by understanding the energetic nature of money. Welcome to Chapter 5. Today we are going to heal your relationship with money. We are going to stop seeing it as a necessary evil, or as the root of all evil. We are going to see it for what it truly is, divine energy in motion in this world. If you have money problems, it is not because the economy is bad. It is because your energetic flow is blocked. It is because you hate what you say you want. It is because you play at being poor to feel good. Today, we are going to light the alchemical furnace. We are going to turn your scarcity mindset into a treasure mindset now. Money is water, the current. In English, the word for money is currency. It comes from the Latin currens, running, flowing. It means current. Money is like water, or like electricity. If it flows, it generates life, moves mills, and lights up cities. If it stagnates, it rots, smells bad, and turns into a swamp. Greed. The code says, you don't own it, you are the pipe. Most poor people try to catch the water with closed hands. They are afraid it will escape. By clenching their fist, they block the entry of new water. King Solomon was a giant aqueduct. He received obscene amounts of gold, yes, but he also spent obscene amounts. He built temples, palaces, and walled cities. He kept the flow moving fast. He paid artisans, soldiers, and priests. He financed fleets of ships. He gave extravagant diplomatic gifts. Money flowed in and flowed out. That kept the system's pressure high. If you want to be rich, you have to lose the fear of spending, or rather, circulating. I don't mean wasting on vices, I mean investing in your expansion. Wealth is not what you have accumulated in the bank. That is stagnant water. Wealth is the volume of water you are able to channel through you without it destroying you. What size is your pipe? Is it a narrow straw out of fear of scarcity, or is it a subway tunnel? Expand your capacity to handle flow and the universe will provide it. The paradox of cause and effect. Here is the central secret of Solomon's wealth. When God offered him whatever he wanted, Solomon did not ask for money. He asked for wisdom, chokmah, to govern well. And
at my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Get social with us.
And God said, because you have not asked for riches, behold, I give you a wise heart, and I also give you what you did not ask for, riches and glory. He got it all. The code says, money is an effect, never a cause. The fatal error of 99% of the population is that they chase the effect, the bills, ignoring the cause, the value. It is like trying to heat the house by screaming at the thermometer without lighting the boiler. Money is an applause, it is a measurement of the value you provide to others. Money is the way the world says, thank you for the value you have contributed. Solomon contributed immense value to the ancient world. Security. His trade routes were safe. Justice. His legal system was impartial. Knowledge. He systematized science and philosophy. He made the world better, and the world paid him for it. If you want to activate the code, stop obsessing over making money. Obsess over solving problems. the amount of money you earn is directly proportional to the magnitude of the problem you solve and the difficulty of replacing you. If you solve small problems, you earn little. If you solve giant problems, you earn absolute fortunes. Stop looking for the gold. Look for the problem. The gold will follow behind like a faithful dog. When you become the person who can fix what others cannot, you become a magnet for the world's resources. Your focus on contribution is the alchemical fire that creates the physical gold in your hands and in your bank account today. The myth of money is evil, the spiritual block. There is a mental virus installed in the collective psyche. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. You've been taught that being poor is noble, that money corrupts, that the rich are evil and dirty. If deep down you think money is bad, how do you expect to have it? Your own morality will sabotage you. Every time you're about to earn a lot of money, your subconscious will say, "Danger, if I have money, I will be bad." And you will do something stupid to lose the money and return to being poor but honest. Solomon destroys this myth. He was the richest man and God's beloved, Jedidiah. The temple of God was not built with good intentions. It was built with tons of gold. Poverty helps no one. If you are poor, you cannot help your family. You cannot fund hospitals. You cannot create jobs. You cannot have free time to meditate or pray because you are too busy surviving. Poverty is slavery and God wants no slaves. Money is neutral. It is an amplifier. If you are a generous person and I give you 10 million, you will be a great philanthropist. If you are an idiot and I give you 10 million, you will be an idiot with a megaphone. Money only reveals what you already are. Heal your relationship with gold. Blessing it is the key to freedom. The alchemy of trade, the ships of Tarshish. Solomon did not sit around waiting for miracles. He had a merchant fleet. For the king had at sea a fleet of ships of Tarshish. Once every 3 years the fleet came bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. 1 Kings 10:22. This teaches us two things. Diversification. He had multiple sources of income. He was smart. Patience. Cycles. The ships took 3 years to return. Modern man wants money now. Crypto, betting, quick hits. Solomon invested for the long term. He sent his ships, his investments, into the unknown. He assumed the risk of the sea. He knew they would take years. But when they returned heavily loaded for him. To apply the code, you have to launch your own ships of Tarshish. Do not depend on a single salary. A single ship, it is dangerous. If that ship sinks, you starve. Build a fleet. Have a job. Have an investment. Have a small side business. Sell your knowledge. And have patience. Real wealth is built through compound interest. Wealth is the harvest of what you sowed 3 years ago. If you sowed nothing 3 years ago, that is why you have nothing today. Sow today. Launch the ship today. It won't return tomorrow, but it will return. By spreading your efforts across multiple channels, you ensure that your kingdom remains prosperous regardless of the tide. The peace tax tributes. Much of Solomon's wealth came from tributes paid to him by other kings. Why did they pay? Out of fear, not just fear. They paid for peace. Under Solomon's protection, trade flourished. It was more profitable for neighboring kingdoms to pay Solomon a tribute and be under his safety umbrella than to fight him or live in chaos. Solomon sold order. Money flows to where there is stability. Investors flee unstable countries. Money flees unstable families. If your life is a constant drama, money will not stay with you. It is afraid of the chaos. If you become a solid, predictable, reliable person, other people's money will seek refuge in you today. People pay fortunes for security. Be the rock in the middle of the storm, and people will throw their money at you so that you protect them, or so that you teach them to be like you. By embodying the frequency of order, you become a natural container for the wealth of the world, which always seeks the safest and stablest harbor. The law of the vacuum and generosity. The Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee are joined by the same river, the Jordan. The Sea of Galilee is full of fish and life. The Dead Sea has no life. It is pure salt. What is the difference? The Sea of Galilee receives water from the north and lets it out to the south. It flows. The Dead Sea receives water and keeps it all. It has no outlet. The water evaporates and leaves the bitter salt. The miser is a Dead Sea. He accumulates and accumulates. He is afraid to let go, and his wealth becomes toxic. He gets sick. His children fight over the inheritance. His life is bitter. Solomon practiced strategic generosity. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it. Ecclesiastes 11:1. Giving is not losing. Giving is declaring to the universe, I have so much that I can afford to let this go, because I know I am the source and I can generate more. It is a demonstration of power and faith. When you give, you are breaking the scarcity mindset now. You are opening the outlet gate, so that new water can enter through the inlet gate. If you block the exit, you block the entrance. Test it. When you feel poorest, give something. Anything. Time. A coin. Advice. Break the cycle of fear with an act of real generosity. The universe mirrors your openness and returns it multiplied. Gold is condensed light. The alchemist said that gold is not just any metal. It is condensed sunlight. It is the metal that does not rust. It is eternal. It represents immortality. Having gold or money is having stored time. If you have money, you don't have to sell your time for survival. You can buy others' time. You can buy your own freedom. Solomon used gold to beautify the temple. He covered the walls in gold. Why? Because gold reflects light. Money should be used to bring light, to create beauty, to educate, to heal, to enjoy. Do not keep money under the mattress for when bad times come. If you save for bad times, you are decreeing that they will come, and they will come. Save for investment, save for opportunities, save for expansion. The intention with which you save defines the destination of that savings. By viewing your capital as a tool for illumination and progress, you align your wealth with the highest forces of creation, ensuring its growth and its protection. The everything is mine mindset, sovereignty. There is a subtle but giant difference between the owner and the administrator. The slave thinks, this is not mine. The king thinks, everything in my kingdom is my responsibility. When you adopt the total owner mindset of your economic reality, you stop blaming. You stop blaming the government, taxes, or your boss. If you lack money, it is your responsibility. If you have excess money, it is your responsibility. This assumption of responsibility is heavy, yes. But it is the only door to freedom. Solomon did not wait for Egypt to subsidize him. He created the wealth. Stop waiting for help. Help is just crumbs to keep you quiet. Go out and hunt. The world is full of money. There are trillions of dollars moving electronically every second above your head. You just have to raise an antenna, a product, a service, a skill, to catch a small fraction of that flow. Money is not scarce. What is scarce is people with the courage to go and get it today. The Midas touch versus the Midas curse. Be careful. The desire for gold has a shadow. Midas asked that everything he touched turn into gold. It was granted. And he starved to death because his food turned into metal. And he killed his daughter by hugging her. Money is an excellent servant, but a terrible master. If you serve money, greed, you will be cold and alone. If you serve money, you will be alone like a gold statue. If money serves you purpose, you will have a warm and abundant life. Solomon maintained balance for most of his life, but in the end, he faltered. The code's warning is clear. Never love money more than your own soul. Money is a tool, not a god. Use it well. Use the hammer to build the house, but do not fall in love with the hammer. Have full bank accounts and a detached heart. Be able to lose everything tomorrow and know that you would still be king because your ability to generate, your alchemy, is in your mind, not in your pocket. Your true wealth is your sovereign consciousness. Protocol, activating financial alchemy. To activate Chapter 5, we are going to change your financial vibration. 1. The wallet ritual. Take out your wallet. How is it? Old, broken, full of crumpled receipts. That is a contempt for money. Buy a good wallet. Clean it. Put the bills in order, from largest to smallest, stretched out facing the same way. Treat money with physical respect. Tell your subconscious a king lives here. 2. The reconciliation letter. Write a letter to money. Be honest. Dear money, I have been afraid of you. I have called you dirty. I have blamed you for my misfortunes. I am sorry. I forgive you and I forgive myself. You are welcome now. Burn the letter and feel the poverty contract break. 3. Personal tithe. before paying the landlord, the utility bill, or Netflix, pay yourself. Separate 10% of everything you earn, automatically. That money is not to be touched. It is to invest or to generate a money magnet. Watching that account grow gives you security. 4. Raise your prices. Value. If you sell something or work for yourself, raise your prices by 10% tomorrow. If you work for someone else, start planning how to ask for a raise based on the value you contribute, not your need. The world values you exactly as you value yourself. If you sell cheap, they buy you cheap. Chapter 6. The Queen of Sheba, the Magnetic Principle. Jerusalem trembles. The ground vibrates under the hooves of 1,000 camels. The air is filled with exotic scents that the Hebrews have never smelled. Spices from Arabia, incense from Yemen, perfumes from Ethiopia. An endless caravan crosses the city gates. In the center, surrounded by giant Nubian guards, travels a powerful woman. She is the Queen of Sheba, Makeda or Bilquis, the most powerful monarch of the south. She has traveled more than 2,500 kilometers through bandit-infested deserts, scorching heat and deadly dunes. A journey of months. Why? Did Solomon invade her? No. Did Solomon threaten her? No. Did Solomon beg her to come? Never. She came for one reason. She came for one single reason. She could not resist. She had heard the rumor. Solomon's fame had crossed borders, seas, and deserts until it reached her ears. The light of Jerusalem shone with such intensity that the queen, a royal moth, had to fly toward the fire. And she did not come empty-handed. She brought 120 talents of gold. She brought precious stones and spices in a quantity as never came again. This biblical scene hides the most potent commercial and seductive secret of the code, the magnetic principle. The code says, do not chase, attract. Solomon is the sun, the center, the electric, that which emits. Sheba is the earth, the visitor, the magnetic. Sheba is that which receives. Most of you live life chasing the Queen of Sheba, money, love, clients, opportunities. You run after her, sweating, pleading, lowering your prices, giving away your time. And she flees, because the nature of the queen is to flee from the one who pursues her, and to surrender to the one who fascinates her. If you have to chase it, it is not yours. If you have to force it, it will break. Today we are going to stop running. We are going to plant ourselves in the ground. We are going to turn on the light. And we are going to make the world cross the desert to come to us. By shifting your polarity, you become the prize that the world seeks. Physics of attraction, electric versus magnetic. The universe functions by polarities. There is a force that emits, masculine electric, and a force that receives, attracts, feminine magnetic. Solomon represents the positive pole. He is fixed. He is centered on his temple. He is busy with his God and his wisdom. Sheba represents the negative pole in the electrical, not moral sense. She is in motion. She seeks to be filled. The law is simple. That which is full attracts that which is empty. Solomon was so full of himself, of purpose, of order, of internal wealth, that he generated a gravitational field. Sheba, the world, resources, admiration, felt the gravitational pull and fell into his orbit today. Modern man makes the mistake of inverting the polarity. He feels empty, needing, lacking, lonely, and goes out into the world to find someone or something to fill him. He becomes a black hole of need, and people notice it. They smell your desperation. In an interview, the recruiter smells that you need the money, so they offer less. In a date, the woman smells that you need validation, so she loses interest. In a sale, the client smells that you need to close the deal, so they distrust you. Neediness is the number one repellent of wealth. To activate the code of Sheba, you have to kill your need. You have to become Solomon. You must be occupied. You have to be so busy building your temple, so in love with your own life, so full of your own project, that the arrival of the Queen of Sheba is a pleasant extra, not a vital necessity. When you don't need her, she desires you. By focusing on your own excellence, you create the vacuum that the world naturally rushes to fill. The rumor fame precedes the man. How did the queen find out about Solomon's existence? And when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him. 1 Kings 10:1. Fame, the rumor, personal brand. In antiquity, there was no internet. Reputation traveled by word of mouth. Solomon cared for his narrative carefully. He made sure the merchants leaving Jerusalem told wonderful stories. You have to see the temple. You have to see how he judges. You have to see the gold. Those stories, amplified by distance, created a myth. People don't buy products, they buy myths. People don't fall in love with real people, they fall for the projected image. The code says, your reputation enters the room before you do. If your reputation is he is a desperate, cheap, and messy guy, the door will close before you arrive. If your reputation is he is a magician, he is excellent, he is exclusive, the door will be open and there will be a red carpet. What do they say when you're gone? Are you building your legend? You don't need to lie. You need to amplify your excellence. Do things so well that people have no choice but to talk about it. Solomon did great things. He didn't build a chapel. He built the temple. He didn't write a poem. He wrote 3,000 proverbs. Mediocrity is invisible. Excellence is a cry. Excellence is a cry that crosses the desert. If you want to attract the queen, big investors, high-value partners, you have to do things worthy of being told. Every action you take is a line in the story the world tells about you. Make sure that story is so compelling that even monarchs would cross oceans just to see if it is true. The mystery, the seduction of the veil. Sheba didn't come because she knew everything about Solomon. She came because she wanted to know more. She came to prove him with hard questions, enigmas. Mystery is the engine of desire. If you are an open book, you are boring. If you are always available, you are boring. If you reply in 3 seconds, you demonstrate lack. If you respond to messages instantly, you prove you have nothing better to do. Solomon was an inaccessible king. He lived behind walls, guards, and protocols. To see him, you had to make an effort. That inaccessibility creates value. What is scarce is expensive. What is abundant is cheap. You are too abundant, you give yourself away. You tell your whole life on the first date. You tell all your business secrets in the first meeting. Shut your mouth, put on a veil. Let people wonder, who is he really? What is he thinking? How does he do it? That curiosity is the magnetic hook that drags them toward you. Solomon didn't go to the border to meet Sheba. He waited on his throne. Maintain your position. Let them come to you. By holding your ground, you signal that your time and presence are valuable prizes that must be earned. The more someone has to invest to reach you, the more they will value you once they arrive. Mystery is the silent language of high-status authority. The enigmas, the competence test. The Queen of Sheba was not a foolish groupie. She was a powerful and intelligent monarch. She was not going to give away her gold to the first king she found. She put him to the test. She came to prove him with hard questions. She threw riddles, philosophical paradoxes, and diplomatic problems at him. She tested him. She wanted to see if the myth was real. She wanted to see if there was substance behind the glow. Solomon was not offended. He didn't say, "Who do you think you are to question me?" He answered everything. There was not anything hid from the king, which he told her not. He demonstrated his competence. He was the real deal. Here is the key. Magnetism attracts, but competence retains. You can attract an opportunity with marketing, but if you don't know how to solve the problem, enigmas, when the client arrives, they will leave and take their gold with them. The code says, be as good as they say you are. When opportunity tests you, you must shine. Opportunity will always test you. Great clients are difficult and high-value people are demanding. You cannot fake wisdom before a queen. She will detect the fraud. Study, prepare, sharpen your sword, chapter 4, so that when Sheba throws the enigma at you, you cut it in the air with a smile. True power is being ready for the test. Visual seduction, the stage effect. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom, and the house that he had built, and the meat of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendance of his ministers, and their apparel, there was no more spirit in her. 1 Kings 10, 4-5. It was a technical knockout. She was left breathless by him. It wasn't just his words. It was his aesthetics. The way his servants dressed, the architecture, the food. Solomon understood the power of staging. You are the art director of your life. If you invite someone to your kingdom, your house, your office, your life, will they be left breathless? Or will they see disorder and dirt? Beauty is a force of massive seduction. You don't need millions to have good taste. You need order, cleanliness, lighting, and harmony. Take care of the details. The clothes of your employees, or your own. The design of your website. The smell of your home. Everything communicates. Every detail tells a story of your value. Solomon seduced the queen through the senses, before seducing her through the intellect. If you enter through the eyes, you have already won half the kingdom. By presenting a reality that is harmonious and refined, you prove that you are a master of your environment, which is the ultimate proof of a sovereign mind. The exchange, giving to receive. Many people think of the law of attraction as something passive. I sit, I visualize, and I receive. False. Solomon and Sheba starred in a massive exchange. She gave him 120 talents of gold and spices, and he gave unto the queen of Sheba all her desire, whatsoever she asked, beside that which Solomon gave her of his bounty. It was a two-way flow. The code says, generosity is the lubricant of magnetism. The stingy person blocks the flow. If you want to attract money, you have to move money. If you want to attract love, you have to give love, without expecting anything in return from your abundance. Solomon didn't give gifts to buy her. He was already rich. He gave gifts to honor her and to demonstrate his own power. Look how much I have that I can cover you in jewels. When you give from abundance, you signal to the universe and to the other person that you are not afraid to lose, that your source is infinite, and that is incredibly sexy and magnetic. Rich people want to do business with generous people, not with people who count pennies. By being a large-scale giver, you position yourself as a high-level player in the game of life. You prove that you are connected to an inexhaustible supply, and that confidence acts as a beacon for even more wealth and high-level connections. Sexual polarity, the king and the queen. Although the biblical text is chaste, Ethiopian legends say Solomon and Sheba had a romance and a son, Menelik. This makes perfect metaphysical sense. The encounter between the maximum masculine and the maximum feminine generates life. To have magnetism, you have to inhabit your pole. You must embrace your true nature. If you are a man, or masculine energy in business, be direction, be purpose, be structure, be penetration. Do not be indecisive, do not be soft, do not ask for permission. If you are a woman, or feminine energy in attraction, be reception, be intuition, be beauty, be flow. Do not be rigid, do not chase, be the flower, not the bee. The problem today is that everyone is in the middle, lukewarm, men who don't lead and women who don't trust. Solomon led. Sheba trusted. She traveled toward him. The spark flew. If you want to attract, polarize, define who you are. Nothing kills magnetism more than ambiguity. Be a king or be a queen, but don't be a confused commoner. The secret of non-resistance, letting go. At the end of the story, the queen of Sheba left. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. Solomon didn't lock her in a tower. He didn't beg her to stay. He let her go. This is supreme detachment. He enjoyed her presence, exchanged gifts, wisdom, and love, and then he opened his hand. He was free. The one who tries to possess destroys magnetism. If you try to catch the butterfly, you kill it. If you let the butterfly fly, it will return, or others will come. Solomon knew that he was the temple. Visitors come and go. The temple remains. Your value does not depend on who stays with you. It depends on who you are. Your value depends on who you are when everyone leaves. If Sheba leaves, do not cry. Go back to your business. Go back to governing. That emotional independence is what will make Sheba return, or make her send her daughter. By being self-sufficient, you remain the center of your own gravity, unshakable by the coming and going of others. Vampirism versus the sun. There are two ways to attract. One, as a black hole absorbing energy. I need you to love me, I need you to help me. It attracts victims and toxic saviors. Two, as a sun, radiating energy. I have heat and light to spare. It attracts planets, life, and growth. Solomon was a sun. He gave without depleting his own core. People came to him not to give him things, but to warm themselves with his wisdom. By warming themselves they flourished, and in gratitude they gave him gold. Ask yourself, do people leave your presence with more energy or less energy? Are you a battery or a charger? If you are a charger, you will never lack people or money. The world is dying of cold. The one who has fire becomes the leader. Light your internal fire, passion, purpose, joy. Do not look for people. Look for the fire. People will come to see how you burn. When your life is a radiant expression of your own divinity, you don't have to seek out the world. The world will seek out you. The flattery trap. When you are magnetic, you attract everything. You attract queens of Sheba, but you also attract flies, parasites, and flatterers. Everyone wants to be the king's friend. This is where you need the sword of chapter 4. Do not let anyone in who comes with gifts. Some gifts are Trojan horses. Be very vigilant with your inner circle. Solomon accepted Sheba because she was an equal. She had her own kingdom. She didn't need Solomon to survive. Distrust those who need you too much. Seek relationships of interdependence, two kings collaborating, not of dependence, a king and a parasite. Keep your magnetism clean by filtering who enters your orbit today. Protocol the magnet ritual. To activate chapter 6, we are going to invert your polarity from chaser to attractor. 1. The initiative fast, 7 days. For 1 week, stop initiating. Do not text first, unless it's vital work. Do not look for plans. Do not chase. Devote all that energy to improving yourself. Train harder, dress better, read more, work on your project. Observe what happens. At first, silence, the world is used to you rowing. Then curiosity. Where is he? What is he doing? Then, attraction. They will start calling you. When they ask what you were doing, say, I was busy building my empire. That is an aphrodisiac. 2. Showcase improvement. Audit your public image online. Do you look desperate or do you look successful? Eliminate bad photos, eliminate complaints, upload photos where you are doing interesting things, not boring selfies, project a life you would want to enter. 3. Intentional mystery. Next time they ask, how's it going? Don't vomit your problems, say, incredible, things are moving. Incredible. Very interesting things are happening that you will soon see. And smile. Leave a blank space. Force them to ask more. 4. Give value without expectation. Give a tip, a contact, or a gift to someone influential without asking for anything. Just, I thought this would help you best, and leave. This generates high status. Chapter 7. A Time for Everything, The Cosmic Rhythms. In the final years of the reign, King Solomon, now an old man with a white beard and eyes full of centuries, sits down to write his final memoirs. He is no longer the fiery young man who asked for wisdom. He is no longer the obsessive builder of the temple. He is no longer the passionate lover. Now he is the observer, the preacher. He takes his pen and writes the most famous words in human history. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal, a time to destroy and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh. People read this at funerals with a sad voice. They think it is a poem about resignation. They think Solomon is saying, well, that's life. Sometimes you have to suffer, just deal with it. What a gigantic mistake. Solomon is not talking about resignation. He is talking about cosmic military strategy. He is revealing the code of time. The code says, the universe is not linear, it is cyclic. The fatal error of modern man is believing that life is an upward straight line. You believe you must always be producing. You must always be growing. You must always be happy. You must always be at the top. That is a lie. And it is a dangerous lie. Nature does not work like that. If you try to harvest wheat in winter, not only do you get no wheat, but you die of cold and break the plow. If you try to sow in the scorching heat of summer without rain, the seed burns. Most of your failures are not because you are incompetent. They are because you have the wrong clock. You are trying to force a door when it's closed. You are sleeping when the universe has opened the door wide. Welcome to Chapter 7. Today we are going to synchronize your internal clock with the clock of the stars. We are going to learn that patience is not passivity. It is stalking. we will discover that rest is a war tactic, and we will understand why the man who knows the times is invincible. Chronos versus Kairos, the two clocks. The Greeks had two words for time, chronos, clock time, quantitative, seconds, minutes, hours. It is the slave's time, clock in at 9, out at 5. It is linear and devours life. Kairos, the time of opportunity, qualitative, the right moment. It is the king's time. It is not measured in minutes, it is measured in impact. Solomon lived in Kairos. He didn't watch his hourglass obsessively. He looked at the signs. Is it time for war? If the answer was yes, he attacked with total fury. Is it time for peace? If the answer was yes, he traded and built. Modern man lives trapped in Kronos. He is in a hurry. I have to be rich before 30. I must marry by 35. That hurry disconnects you from Kairos. When you are in a hurry, you make mistakes. You force relationships that are not mature. You launch products that are not ready. You invest in markets that are falling. Hurry is a lack of faith in cycles. It is the ego screaming, I control time. Solomon says, you don't control time, you surf it. The four seasons of success, your life, your businesses, and your relationships, pass through four inevitable seasons. You cannot skip them. 1. Winter, death and planning. Everything seems dead. No sales, no partner. You feel stuck and alone. The error, panicking. Trying to do things desperately to make it look like there is life. Strategy. Rest and root. In winter, life does not stop, it goes underground. Roots grow, it is time to read, to study, to plan the strategy, to clean the temple. If you are in winter, do not launch anything. Do not initiate, prepare. Sharpen the axe. Winter is the womb of spring. 2. Spring, sowing and fragility. Buds begin to sprout. A new idea. A first date. The error, shouting it from the rooftops or wanting to harvest already. Strategy, protection and work. The plant is a baby. If you step on it, it dies. It is time to sow massively, but with care. Protect your ideas. Silence. Water them. Take care. Do not expect immediate results. Work with faith and patience today. 3. Summer. Aggressive growth. It is sunny. Everything grows fast. There is much energy. The error, taking a mental vacation or relaxing. Strategy, maximum intensity. When it is summer, the farmer works from sunrise to sunset. It is the time to scale the business, to do aggressive marketing, to travel, to expand. Do not sleep during harvest. 4. Autumn, harvest and pruning. The fruits are ripe, money arrives, recognition comes. The error, believing it will last forever and spending it all. Strategy, gathering and storage. Collect the profit, enjoy it. But save for the coming winter, and most importantly, prune dry branches. Cut relationships that no longer serve. Prepare to die a little. Ask yourself right now, what season are you in? If you are in winter and behave as if it were summer, spending energy like crazy, you will burn out and fail. Identify your season and act according to it. That is wisdom. By aligning your effort with the natural cycle, you multiply your results and your peace. The art of stalking, active patience. The word patience has bad press. It sounds like weakness, like sitting and waiting. Change it to stalking. The lion in the savannah spends 90% of its time still observing the gazelle. Is he lazy? No. He is in maximum tension. He is calculating distance, wind, speed. He is waiting for the kairos, the exact second the gazelle drinks. In that second, he explodes. That is Solomonic patience. It is not inaction. It is potential action. It is keeping the arrow in the bow with the string taut, waiting for the target. It is more tiring to hold the bow taut than to fire. It requires brutal mental discipline not to fire prematurely out of anxiety. Don't be premature. Many of you fire too soon. You launch the offer before warming up the client. You confess your love before creating the attraction. You sell stocks before they truly rise. You fail for being early. The king knows how to hold the tension. He holds. He holds a little more. And when the moment comes, zap! He does not hesitate. The window of opportunity. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Ecclesiastes 11:4. Here Solomon gives you a reality check. Waiting for the right moment does not mean waiting for everything to be perfect. There will never be a moment without risk. You will never have all the information or enough money. Kairos is a window that opens and closes fast. When the universe gives you the green light, a strong intuition, a coincidence, an offer, you have to jump. If you hesitate, the window closes. Paralysis by analysis is the death of success. Solomon says, there is a time to wait and a time to act. When it's time to act, do it with violence. Burn the ships. Commit totally. Doubt is an insult to Kairos. When you recognize the opening, your commitment must be absolute. The time for strategy is over, and the time for execution has arrived. A king does not hesitate at the threshold of his triumph. He steps through with the full weight of his authority and his will. Their time to kill, knowing how to close. Her time to kill and a time to heal. This sounds harsh, but it is necessary. There are projects that must die. There are relationships that must die. There are versions of yourself that must die. The weak man prolongs the agony. He keeps a failing business for years, just in case it recovers. He is afraid to kill. He keeps a dead and toxic marriage for the children, or comfort. He keeps incompetent employees out of pity. The Code of Solomon demands the capacity for strategic euthanasia. If the horse is dead, get off. If the tree is rotten, cut it so it doesn't infect the forest. It is not cruelty, it is efficiency. It is love for the life that works. For the new to enter, spring, the old must die, winter. If you fill your garden with dead trees, there is no room for new shoots. Make a list of what needs to die in your life. Take out the sword of chapter 4, kill it fast, mourn, and keep moving. True renewal is only possible when you are willing to let go of the ghosts of the past. The Sabbath, the technology of rest. Solomon respected the Sabbath, not just for religion but for productivity. God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Does God get tired? No, he is omnipotent. Then why did he rest? To contemplate, to seal the creation, to allow the work to set. Modern man in his arrogance thinks he can work 7 days a week. Hustle, grind, no sleep. That is stupidity. The biological and creative machine needs the void to recharge. If a bow is always taut, it loses its elastic force. You have to unstring it so it can fire far again. Rest is not doing nothing. Rest is active repair. During sleep and deep leisure, your subconscious solves problems. Solomon's best ideas didn't come in the council room. They came in the silence of the garden. You must decree times of no time, moments where the clock does not exist. If you do not respect rest, the universe will force you to rest through illness, depression, or an accident. You choose voluntary rest or forced rest. Impatience and debt. What is financial debt? It is crystallized impatience. You want the car today, but you don't have the money today. So you bring money from the future, credit, to pay for the present. You are violating time. You are robbing your future self to satisfy your present self. Solomon warned, the borrower is servant to the lender. When you go into debt for a whim, you become a slave of time. Now you have to work to pay for the past. You are no longer free to seize the kairos of the future, because your future is already mortgaged. The patient man saves and invests. He buys his freedom. The impatient man goes into debt. He sells his freedom. Respect the time. Respect the gestation time of wealth. A pregnancy lasts 9 months. If you try to take it out at 4 months, you don't have a baby faster. You have a tragedy. Fast wealth is usually fragile wealth. By honoring the natural duration of growth, you ensure that your empire is built on solid ground, capable of withstanding any storm. Synchronicity when the universe winks. When you live aligned with the code, you start to experience synchronicities. You think of someone and they call you. You need a book and find it on a bench. You have a doubt and hear the answer on the radio. This is not a coincidence. It is confirmation that you are dancing to the rhythm of cosmic music. You are in the flow. Solomon called this walking with God. When this happens, do not force anything. The doors open by themselves. If a door sticks, do not kick it. It is probably not your door or not your time. The sign that you are on the right track is ease. I don't say there is no effort. I say there is no unnecessary friction. The oar enters the water smoothly. The boat advances. If you feel you are fighting the whole world, stop, look at the clock. Maybe you are trying to sail at low tide. Wait for the tide to rise. When you move in harmony with Kairos, the entire universe acts as a tailwind, carrying you toward your destiny with majestic grace. The business heartbeat. Businesses breathe. They inhale. Investment, hiring, spending. They exhale. Sales, profits, layoffs. If you only try to exhale without inhaling, improving the product, caring for the team, you suffocate. If you only try to inhale without exhaling, you explode. Solomon expanded the kingdom and then consolidated it. War and peace. Do not be afraid when sales go down. It is the exhalation. It is the moment to review the strategy. Do not go crazy when sales go up. It is the inhalation. Prepare for the next dip. Stay calm on the roller coaster. The novice entrepreneur panics at every curve. The king enjoys the ride because he knows the rails. Protocol. Synchronizing the clocks. To activate Chapter 7, let's stop looking at the clock and start looking at the compass. 1. Season audit. Look at the key areas of your life. Money, love, health. Diagnose what season you are in for each. Money. Are you sowing, spring, or gathering, autumn? Love. Are you alone, winter, or in passion, summer? Accept it. 2. The sacred day, digital Sabbath. Choose one day a week. From Saturday night to Sunday night. Zero work. Zero screens. Only nature, family, reading, sex, food, sleep. It is a system reset. On Monday, you will be a productive beast. If you don't do it, you will be a zombie all week. 3. The 24-hour rule. Wait 24 hours. For big decisions, wait 24 hours. Let a sleep cycle pass. For purchase impulses, wait 72 hours. If after 3 days you still want it, buy it. If the desire passed, it was just a passing emotion. 4. Practice active waiting. Next time you are in traffic or a line, don't take out your phone. Feel the wait. Breathe. Stalk your moment. Chapter 8. The Shadow and Vanity, the Ego. Jerusalem, 931 BC. King Solomon is old. His hands, which once lifted stones and wielded the sword of justice, now tremble. His eyes, which once shone with the light of conquest and seduction, are now dull, tired, covered by a cataract of cynicism. He is the master of a dying empire. He is sitting in the most beautiful garden today. All around him are peacocks, marble fountains, trees of every known species. In his coffers are tons of gold. In his harem are 1,000 women, 700 wives and 300 concubines. He has everything, absolutely everything a human being can desire. He has tasted, possessed, and consumed. And yet he takes the papyrus and writes. He writes the most devastating sentence in universal literature. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Havel Havelim. What happened to him? How is it possible that the man who had the master code, the wisest and richest man, ended his days in a state of existential depression? The answer is simple and terrifying. He forgot the code. He let his shadow win. Massive success has a toxic side effect. If not handled with radioactive protection suits, it inflates the ego until it explodes. Welcome to Chapter 8. Today we are going to talk about the real danger. It is not poverty. Poverty is a simple problem to solve with work and strategy. Wealth is the complex one. The complex problem is wealth. The problem is what you do when you have already won. When no one says no to you. When everyone flatters you. When you have absolute power. That is where tyrants are born. That is where empires fall. Solomon built the temple but let his ego destroy the foundations. Today we learn radical detachment. The real meaning of vanity, Hevel. The translation vanity is poor. It makes us think of a woman looking in the mirror. The original Hebrew word Solomon used is Hevel. It means vapor, smoke, breath, mist. Vapor of vapors, all is vapor. Solomon was not saying that life is not worth it. He was saying that life is ungraspable. It is fleeting today. Try to catch smoke with your hands. You see it, it's there, it has shape. But when you close your fist, there is nothing. The code says, the material world is real, but it is not solid. Solomon's error, and yours, is trying to find permanence in something that is impermanent by nature. You seek security in the shifting winds. You think when you have the $1 million you will feel safe forever. You think when you marry the perfect person, you will be happy forever. It is smoke. You get the million, and the next day you are afraid of losing it. Or you want $2 million. The satisfaction evaporates. You get the partner and routine arrives. It's gone. Solomon tried to fill his infinite void with finite things, and he discovered the law of diminishing returns. The first glass of wine is delicious. The 10th makes you dizzy. The 20th kills you. More is not better. More is just more smoke. True fulfillment cannot be found in the accumulation of shadows or the counting of mist. The shadow of the sun. The brighter the light, the darker the shadow. Jung said, the greater the light, the larger the shadow. Solomon was the sun of his time. He shone so brightly that his shadow was gigantic. What was his shadow? Lust and idolatry. Not just sexual lust, but lust for acquisition. He wanted to possess everything, all wisdom, all gold, all women. He wanted to own the whole world. That desire to devour the world is the shadow of the king archetype. It is the devouring tyrant. You also have a shadow, and the more success you have, the more it will grow. If you are a successful and disciplined entrepreneur, your shadow may be a secret desire for chaos and excess. If you do not integrate it, it will strike. We see this every day. The millionaire CEO caught in an absurd sex scandal. The spiritual guru who robs his followers. The perfect athlete who takes drugs. They are not hypocrites. They are people with much light who ignored their shadow. They thought that being kings, they were above psychological law. They were wrong. Solomon believed he could marry 700 foreign women and worship their gods without it affecting his connection to the true God. He told himself, I am wise. I can handle it. It's just diplomacy. Lie. It was arrogance. Little by little, his heart strayed. The code says you are never too big to fall. Your fall is loud. The God syndrome, arrogance. Success is a hallucinogenic drug. It makes you believe that you are the source. You start thinking, I achieved it. I am a genius. I am special. The rules don't apply to me. You forget that you were helped. You forget Kairos, luck time. You forget your mentors. You forget God or the universe. You become your own idol. This is what happened to Solomon. He started serving God and ended up serving himself. The temple ceased to be the house of Yahweh and became the temple of Solomon. When the ego appropriates the work rots. Why? Because the ego is a closed system. It is small. Inspiration comes from the open system today. If you close the valve, believing you are the source, the water stagnates and becomes corrupt. Creativity dies. Joy dies. Only the paranoid maintenance of power remains. When you believe you are the creator rather than the channel, you lose the very genius that brought you to the throne in the first place. Humility is safety. The wives of pleasure dispersion. Why 1,000 women? Is it humanly possible to love 1,000 women? No. Is it possible to satisfy them? No. Then, what for? To fill the void and to demonstrate power. Collecting people is the lowest form of vanity. But the real problem was not the sex. It was dispersion. His energy was scattered across 1,000 faces. The Code of Solomon is based on focus, with 1,000 women whispering in his ear, asking for things, demanding temples for their gods. Solomon lost the silence. He lost his center. His energy was fragmented into 1,000 pieces. He no longer governed with clarity. He governed to please his environment and keep the peace. He became a weak politician, not a wise king. You don't have 1,000 wives, but you have 1,000 distractions. You have Netflix, Instagram, pornography, alcohol, video games, compulsive shopping. They are your concubines. They steal your vital energy, jing. They fragment you. They make you feel full for a moment. Dopamine pleasure leaves you empty the next second. Post-consumption depression. The king who gives himself to pleasure without limits becomes a slave to his senses. And a slave cannot wear the crown. To reclaim your kingdom, you must reclaim your focus and drive the concubines of distraction out of your inner sanctuary. The golden prison, the fear of losing. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes 5:12, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. This is the great irony. You fight to have money to be at peace, and when you have much money, you lose your peace. Now you have something to lose. You are a target for the world. Now you fear thieves, scammers, stock market crashes, revolutions, false friends. You become paranoid. You build higher walls. You hire security. You distrust everyone, even your children. The gold, which was supposed to be your servant, becomes your jailer. You live guarding the treasure. You are a prisoner of your own success. Solomon realized that possessing things carries the burden of maintaining them. I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. What is the solution? To be poor? No, poverty is not the solution. The solution is the steward. You must change your identity. Stop being the owner and be the manager. If you are the owner, loss hurts your soul. If you are the manager, you understand that the goods are not yours. They belong to the kingdom. Your job is to care for them while they are there. If they go, you have lost nothing of yours because you came naked and will leave naked. Memento mori, the skull at the banquet. To cure his vanity, Solomon had to look the only absolute truth in the face, death. One thing befalleth the wise man and the fool, they both die. This seems depressing, but it is the most potent liberation tool in the code. Death is the great equalizer. Knowing you will die destroys the ego, it levels the field. The ego is terrified of death because death is the end of its special story, but the spirit does not care about death. Solomon used death to regain sanity. He said, "What use is it to accumulate so much if I can't take it? What use is it to worry about others' opinions if we'll all be dust? Death is a cold clarity." When you accept your mortality, you become free. You stop doing things to impress people who are going to die, and you start doing things you enjoy here and now. Solomon concludes, "There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy good in his labor." He went back to basics. Happiness was not in the gold throne. It was in the taste of wine in the sunset in work well done today. Memento mori. Remember that you will die. Keep a skull on your desk. When you have a giant business problem, look at the skull. It laughs. It tells you it's not that serious. That perspective returns your peace. The law of enough. The ego never has enough. If you give it 1 million, it wants 10. If you give it 10, it wants 100. It is a bottomless pit. The only way to win the money game is to set an exit goal. You have to define what is enough for you. Enough is a paid-off house, health, and X amount per month to live free. Set your limit now. Once you get there, stop, or keep playing but change the rules. Play for fun, not for hunger. Solomon did not know how to stop. He kept accumulating chariots, horses, and gold until he violated the laws of the Torah that forbade the king from accumulating in excess. That excess created inequality and raised taxes. His greed destroyed his son's legacy. It sparked resentment that split the kingdom in two after his death. Define your enough. If you do not define it, you will be a hamster on the wheel until the day of your heart attack. True mastery is knowing when the cup is full and choosing to stop pouring before it overflows and ruins. Legacy versus fame. Vanity seeks fame, that they talk about me now. The code seeks legacy, that my work serves when I am gone. Solomon, in his vanity, sought fame, but in his wisdom, he left a legacy. Today, no one uses Solomon's coins. His palaces are dust. Not a single stone of his original temple remains. All his gold disappeared from the earth. What remains of him? His words. His code. The immaterial survived the material. What you do for yourself dies with you. What you do for others remains. If you want to be immortal, the ultimate desire of the ego, paradoxically, you have to forget about yourself and serve others. Serve the world to live forever in its memory. Write a book. Teach a child. Create a company that improves lives. Plant a tree. That is the only thing that escapes Havel. The smoke. By investing in the eternal rather than the temporary, you build a monument that time cannot erode and that fire cannot consume. Your legacy is the gold that never loses its luster. The test of Asmodeus, losing the throne. There is a fascinating Talmudic legend about Solomon's fall. it is said that the demon Asmodeus tricked Solomon. He challenged him to prove his power without the magic ring. Solomon, in his arrogance, took off the ring and gave it to him. Immediately, Asmodeus swallowed it, stretched his wings, and threw Solomon far away. Asmodeus took Solomon's appearance and sat on the throne. Solomon became a beggar. He went through synagogues saying, "I am King Kohelet," and they took him for a madman. He ate charity soup. During that time of exile, Solomon learned humility. He understood hunger. He understood his value was not in the crown. He understood that power is a loan, not a property. Eventually, he regained the ring and the throne. But he was not the same. He was a truly wise king because he had known the mud. This story is a metaphor for what life will do to you if you become arrogant. It will take the ring. It will throw you into the mud today. You will go broke. Your partner will leave you. You will fall ill. It is the universe's correction. The universe loves you too much to let you live in the lie of your ego. It will break you to save you. Do not wait for Asmodeus to throw you from the throne. Step down yourself occasionally. Practice austerity. Be human. Protocol deactivating the ego bomb. To survive success, you need to apply the antidote against vanity. 1. The ritual of memento mori. Put a reminder of death in your life. A skull wallpaper or the phrase, "This too shall pass." Go to a cemetery once a year. Walk alone. Read the headstones. People there thought they were indispensable. Relieve yourself. 2. The service. Question. Before each important action, ask yourself, do I do this to be admired, ego, or to provide value, service? If it's for admiration, it's hevel. It will give momentary pleasure and subsequent emptiness. If it's to serve, it's solid gold. It will give lasting satisfaction and build a real legacy. 3. Define your enough. Put a figure on your financial freedom, write it down. When you arrive, celebrate and stop running. Dedicate yourself to playing, creating, or giving. Don't be the richest man in the cemetery. 4. Flattery. Diet. Move away from yes men. Seek friends who tell you the truth. Seek balance. Seek friends who keep you grounded. Friends who knew you before success. Friends who say, "Don't be an idiot, Solomon." Those are your true bodyguards. 5. Detach from something you love. Once a month, give away something you really like. Not something old. Something that hurts a bit to give. Train your detachment. Chapter 9. The 72 Names, the Contact Network. There is a forbidden book, an ancient grimoire attributed to King Solomon, known as Le Megaton Clavicula Salomonis, the Lesser Key of Solomon. The first part of this book, the Goetia, describes how the king invoked, subdued, and enclosed 72 principal spirits, often called demons or genies, in a bronze vessel, sealing it with magic. He sealed them with magical symbols and forced them to obey him. Each spirit had a rank: kings, dukes, marquises, earls, presidents. Each spirit had a specific talent. Bael granted invisibility. Paimon taught all arts and sciences. Bune brought wealth and eloquence. Forrest found lost treasures. It is a manual of powers. The superstitious mind reads this and thinks of exorcisms and sulfur smoke. The mind that knows the code reads this and sees the most sophisticated human resources and networking manual of antiquity. Solomon was not invoking ghosts. Solomon was recruiting human talent. The 72 spirits are a metaphor for his cabinet of government. They represented his network of ambassadors, generals, architects, spies, and business partners. They were powerful people, kings, dukes, with dangerous and specific skills, the powers of the demons. They were difficult people to control. That is why they are called demons and not little angels. People with ego and ambition today. People with the capacity to do harm. But Solomon had the seal, authority, and he knew how to organize them so that, instead of destroying the kingdom, they would build it. Welcome to Chapter 9. Today we are going to kill the myth of the lone wolf. Today you will understand that net worth is equal to your network of contacts. The myth of the solitary genius. We live in a culture that adores the individual. We like the image of the entrepreneur who works alone in his garage and conquers the world. That is a lie. It is propaganda. Steve Jobs had Wozniak and hundreds of engineers. Elon Musk has thousands of the planet's most brilliant minds working for him. Solomon did not build the temple. Solomon ordered the temple to be built. If Solomon had tried to carry the stones himself, he would have died crushed in the first week, and history would have forgotten him. The code says, power is leverage. Leverage means doing more with less. Maximum leverage is OPM, other people's money, OPT, time, and OPM, other people's minds. If you only use your time and your mind, you have a ceiling. You only have 24 hours, you only have one brain. No matter how smart you are limited. But if you have 72 spirits working for you, you have 72 brains and 1,728 hours a day at your disposal. You become omniscient and omnipresent. You become a king in your field. King Solomon knew everything that happened in the world, not because he was a fortune teller, but because he had a network of espionage and trade, the birds of chapter 3, that informed him. Stop trying to do everything yourself. Do it yourself is a poor man's mindset. Delegate it to the best is a king's mindset. Release the control. Identifying the spirits, specialization. Why 72? And why with different powers? Because Solomon understood specialization. He did not ask a warrior spirit to teach him music. He did not ask a spirit of treasures to build walls. In your life, you are trying to have your brother-in-law make your website, keep your books, and fix your car. You are using the wrong tools. You are using mediocre tools for critical tasks. To build your empire, you need to identify which spirits are missing from your vessel. Do you need a law mage, an aggressive lawyer? Do you need a gold guardian, a tax accountant? Do you need a bard, a marketing expert? Do you need a warrior, a sales leader who fears no rejection? These professionals are demons in the good sense. They are obsessive, they are expensive, they are intense. Your job as king is not to know law, accounting, or marketing better than they do. Your job is to lead them. Your job is to have the vision, the blueprint of the temple, and to assign each spirit its place in the work. If you are the smartest person in your room, you are in the wrong room. You have to surround yourself with people who intimidate you a little because of their competence. By managing superior talent, you multiply your own capacity and ensure that every part of your temple is built by a master, rather than a jack-of-all-trades. The pact with Hiram, the strategic alliance. The Bible narrates Solomon's most important commercial alliance, the pact with Hiram I, king of Tyre. Solomon had something Hiram didn't, agricultural products, wheat and oil, and access to land trade routes. Hiram had something Solomon didn't, quality cedar wood, expert architects, and a Phoenician maritime fleet. They traded. What did they do? Compete? Invade? No, they made a pact. Solomon gave him wheat, Hiram gave him wood and technicians. And there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and they too made a league. 1 Kings 5:12. This is the secret of high-level business, synergy. 1+1=3. Solomon didn't try to learn how to cut trees. Solomon outsourced that weakness to an expert. Hiram didn't try to grow wheat on the Rock of Tyre. He outsourced that weakness to Solomon. Both won. The code says, seek complementarity, not similarity. Do not partner with someone just like you. If you are creative, do not partner with another creative. You will starve with ideas. Partner with an obsessive executor of order. If you are shy but technical, partner with an extroverted salesperson. Look for the piece missing from your puzzle, not a copy of your own piece. By joining forces with those who possess what you lack, you create an unbreakable alliance that can dominate the entire market landscape. How to bind the demons, the art of negotiation. In magic, it is said that Solomon bound the demons with magic seals so they could not disobey. In the real world, how do you bind a powerful and talented person so they work for you and do not betray you? With aligned interests. That is the true magic seal. No one works for you out of charity or just for your vision. People work for their own interest. Demons, ambitious people, want things. Money, recognition, power, freedom, contacts. King Solomon was a master psychologist. He knew what each neighboring king, each general, and each merchant wanted, and he gave it to them. He gave the Queen of Sheba all that she desired. He was a giver. To create a solid network, you have to become a dream facilitator. If you want the best lawyer, pay him more than anyone, or give him a case that brings world fame. If you want the best partner, offer a stake in the kingdom not crumbs. The seal that prevents betrayal is the fact that they are better off with you than without you. If at any point they feel that being with you is a burden, the seal breaks and the demon attacks you. Loyalty is bought with mutual benefit. It is cold, but it is real. By ensuring that your success is inextricably linked to their own, you create a circle of ironclad loyalty that no competitor can ever hope to penetrate or break. The 72 names of God, the vibrational network. In Kabbalah, there is another interpretation. The 72 names are not demons, but 72 names of God, combinations of three Hebrew letters, that function as codes to connect with higher energies. There is a name for prosperity, a name for protection, and a name to dissolve the ego. This teaches us spiritual networking for our lives. Your network is not just physical people. Your network is the frequencies to which you connect. Tell me who you walk with, and I will tell you who you are. If you surround yourself with five depressed and broken people, you will be the sixth. You are vibrating in the name of ruin. You must change your circle and your frequency. If you surround yourself with five ambitious, ethical, and rich people, you will be the sixth. You are vibrating in the name of expansion. People are antennas. When you enter a room full of winners, your vibration adjusts to theirs by osmosis. The Code of Solomon requires you to be a vibrational snob in your daily relationships. Protect your inner circle, your Holy of Holies, chapter 2, with a flaming sword. Do not let just anyone in. One rotten apple spoils the basket. One uncontrolled demon, a toxic partner, an envious friend, can destroy the harmony of the other 71. Eliminate those who lower the average and guard your resonance with fierce intent. The danger of rebellion, managing chaos. Having a powerful network is dangerous. If your generals are strong, they can give you a coup d'etat. Jeroboam, one of Solomon's most capable servants, ended up rebelling and dividing the kingdom after the king's death. Why? Because Solomon lost touch with reality and squeezed too hard. He forgot the balance of power. Managing talent requires a left hand and a right hand. If you are too soft, they eat you. If you are too tyrannical, they rebel. The Solomonic balance is respect. A king respects his dukes. He does not treat them as slaves, but as inferior nobles. Recognize their merit. Give them their glory. Acknowledge their value publicly. Napoleon said, "A soldier will fight long and hard for a bit of colored ribbon." Recognition, titles, public praise is sometimes more potent than gold for controlling the demons of the ego. Make your team feel important. If they shine, you shine more because you lead them. Do not compete with your employees or your partners. You are the conductor of the orchestra. Do not try to play the violin better than the violinist. Just make sure he plays on time. By maintaining your role as the visionary and giving others the space to be masters of their own craft, you command respect and ensure that the collective energy is always directed toward the throne. Diplomacy, the art of bloodless war. Solomon was a peaceful king. His name comes from Shalom, peace, but not because he was weak. He had a fearsome army of chariots. However, he rarely used them. He preferred diplomacy. Diplomacy is the art of getting what you want, using words and connections, instead of brute force. He was a master of strategic alliances. Solomon married the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt. It was not for romantic love. It was a master chess move. By marrying the daughter of the neighboring superpower, he secured his southern border without firing an arrow. He used marriages and alliances to weave a safety net around Israel. He was a weaver of peace today. In modern business, this is called joint ventures. Instead of fighting your competition to the death, red ocean, ally with them or buy them. Seek the win-win. War is expensive. War destroys resources. Commercial peace multiplies resources. The code says, turn your enemies into partners. Use their hunger to your advantage. If you can make your enemy earn money with you, he will stop being your enemy. His greed will overcome his hatred. By creating a system where everyone profits from your existence, you make yourself untouchable. Your safety is guaranteed by the self-interest of those who would otherwise be your most dangerous adversaries. The connector, the central node. How do you become Solomon without being a king? Become the connector. There are people who know things, there are people who have money, there are people who have talent, but often they do not know each other. The connector is the one who says, Maria, you have to meet Juan. Let's have lunch. You are the bridge. By making that connection, you create value out of nothing. If the business prospers, both will be grateful to you. They owe you one. You have increased your relational capital. Solomon was the central node of the ancient world. If you wanted to trade between Asia and Africa, you had to go through Solomon. He was the center. Position yourself in the middle. Get to know everyone. You do not need to be the expert, you need to have the expert's phone number. I don't know how to fix that, but I know the best person who does. Let me call him. That phrase is worth millions. It makes you an indispensable person in any room or any negotiation. The bronze vessel, the system. Let's go back to the metaphor. Solomon enclosed the spirits in a vessel. He did not leave them loose around the palace. The vessel represents the system or the organization. A company is a vessel. A contract is a vessel. A management team is a vessel. You need legal and structural containers to handle talent. If you hire people and do not give them clear rules, processes, and objectives, if you do not put them in the vessel, they will create chaos. You need the invocation, the selection process, the pact, the contract, the task, clear objectives, the banishment, the ability to fire if they don't comply. Without the vessel structure, the magic overflows and burns the magician. By creating rigid systems that house fluid talent, you achieve the perfect balance of order and creativity. Your organization becomes a machine that functions with or without your direct intervention, allowing your empire to scale beyond your own hands. The 72 names in gratitude. When your network works, when you have brilliant people building your temple. Do not make the mistake of ingratitude. Solomon gave banquets. Celebrate with your network. Share the loot. A king who eats alone dies poisoned. A king who breaks bread has 72 loyal bodyguards. Share the rewards of your victory. Gratitude is not just saying thank you. It is distributing dividends. It is recognizing that without them, you are just a man with a ring and an idea, but without hands. By honoring those who help you rise, you ensure that they will be there to hold the foundation of your throne when the winds of change begin to blow. Protocol. Weaving the power network. To activate Chapter 9, let's invoke your spirits. 1. Audit of the five. Write the names of the five people you spend the most time with. Calculate the average of their income, happiness, and ambition. That is you. Do you like the result? If not, you must banish low vibration spirits and invoke new ones to your life. 2. Invocation list. What talent do you lack today to make the next leap? Do not say money. Say, who has the money? Do not say sales. Say, who is the best salesperson? Make a list of the three key roles you need. Start looking for those people. Do not look for cheap employees. Look for partners or experts. 3. The gift method. To approach a king or a powerful spirit, do not ask. Offer. Like the Queen of Sheba, bring a gift. What can you do for them? Research. Send an article. Offer a connection. Give valuable feedback for free. Invoke them with an offering of value. That is how the door opens. Offer first. 4. Be the host. Organize a dinner or a small event. Bring together 4 or 5 interesting people from your network who do not know each other. Just introduce them and let the magic happen. You will become the center of gravity for that group. By becoming the source of connection, you solidify your place as the king. You have opened the vessel. You have understood that you are not alone. You have a potential army waiting for your call. But remember, spirits serve the one who has the ring, mental mastery, and the one who maintains the temple, order. If you lose your center, the network will catch you. Leadership is a balance on a sword's edge. Chapter 10. The Fall Final Warning. The year is 930 BC. King Solomon is dead. It was the grandest funeral the world had ever seen. Kings from all nations came to pay tribute. Incense covered Jerusalem like a thick mist. But before Solomon's body grew cold in his tomb, the kingdom began to creak. The foundations were already shaking before the mourning period had ended today. His son Rehoboam ascended the throne. He was a young man raised in golden cradles, who had never known war, nor hunger, nor the need to build something from scratch. He was an heir, not a founder. The people, exhausted by the taxes Solomon had imposed to maintain his excessive luxury, asked for relief. They asked for mercy from the king. Rehoboam, in his spoiled child's arrogance, replied, "My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions." The result was immediate and catastrophic. The 10 northern tribes rebelled, the kingdom split in two, Israel and Judah. The golden age, which had lasted 40 years, crumbled in a single day. The glory was gone. The temple remained standing, but the glory of the United Nation died. And 5 years later, Shishak, king of Egypt, went up to Jerusalem and looted the treasures of the temple and the royal palace. He took the gold shields Solomon had made. All the gold was gone, all the power dissipated. How is it possible for such a giant to fall so fast? How is it possible that the man who wrote, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom," ended his days worshipping pagan idols and creating the conditions for the destruction of his own work? The answer is the final warning of the code. Reaching the top is hard. Staying at the top is 1,000 times harder. Character is the only key. Ascent requires strength. Permanence requires character. And Solomon, at some point along the way, lost his character. Welcome to Chapter 10. Today we are going to perform an autopsy of the failure of the wisest man in the world. Not to judge him, but to save ourselves. Because if you apply the previous 9 chapters, you will succeed. It is mathematical. You are going to have money, power, and influence, and at that moment, you will be at the point of maximum danger. Today we are going to learn to detect the success virus. We are going to learn why you should never take off your armor, not even in times of peace. True sovereignty requires eternal vigilance over the soul. The law of the drift. Solomon didn't wake up one day and say, "Today I'm going to ruin my legacy and worship Moloch." Evil never enters all at once. It enters by drifting. It's like a ship. If you let go of the rudder by 1 degree, nothing happens at the moment. But after 1,000 miles, you've ended up on the wrong continent. Small deviations lead to ruin. Solomon began to tolerate small deviations from the code. One more foreign wife, a small altar to please her, a little extra tax, a little more wine. He told himself, "I am the king. I can handle it. It is insignificant." That is the deadly lie. I can handle it. The code says what you tolerate persists. What persists grows and dominates. Decay is slow, comfortable, and silent. When you're making money, you stop reviewing expenses with a magnifying glass. You relax. When your marriage is going well, you stop having romantic details. You relax. When you are fit, you skip the gym one day. You relax. That relaxation is the cancer. Vigilance is the only cure for the drift. Solomon stopped guarding the doors of his temple. And chaos leaked in, drop by drop, until it flooded the sanctuary. By the time he realized the water was rising, the structural integrity of his soul had already been compromised. You must guard your standards with the same ferocity during the harvest as you did during the sowing. The violation of the 3 laws of the king. In the book of Deuteronomy 17:16-17, God established 3 specific prohibitions for the future kings of Israel. They were the red lines of security. Solomon broke them all. 1. He shall not multiply horses to himself. Military power, ego. Horses were the tanks of antiquity. They represented brute force and self-reliance. Solomon accumulated 12,000 horsemen and 1,400 chariots. This created paranoia. When you base your security on your walls and your weapons, you live in fear that someone has a bigger weapon. Solomon stopped trusting the covenant and started trusting steel. When you trust only in your strength, you become rigid and aggressive in your reign. 2. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself. Distraction. Lust. We already spoke of this. The fragmentation of the heart. Lest his heart turn away. The problem is not sex. It is influence. Whoever sleeps with you has access to your subconscious. Solomon allowed his foreign wives to bring their customs, their gods, and their values. Little by little, the king stopped listening to his prophets and started listening to his concubines. If you surround yourself with people who do not share your vision, only for pleasure or interest, you will end up adopting their vision. Your inner circle determines your outer reality. Protect your intimacy from those who do not honor your code. 3. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold, greed, fear, note, accumulate for himself. Solomon stopped circulating wealth, chapter 5, and started hoarding it. He made gold shields and hung them on the walls. Useless gold. Dead gold. When money stops being a service tool and becomes an idol, it possesses you. Excessive accumulation led to disconnection from the reality of the people. He swam in gold while his subjects drowned in taxes. By hoarding the flow, he created a spiritual and economic dam that eventually burst. True wealth must breathe when you choke the currency of your kingdom out of fear. You invite the very poverty you dread. The ivory tower, the loss of empathy. This was the political error that killed his dynasty. Solomon built so much and so fast that he needed forced labor and brutal tributes. At first, the people accepted the sacrifice for the glory of the temple. But after the temple, Solomon built his own palace, which took more years and was larger than God's. He never stopped building. Then palaces for his women. Then fortresses. He never stopped. He isolated himself in his ivory tower. He no longer walked the streets. He no longer smelled the sweat of the masons. He only saw numbers on a papyrus. The code says, if you lose touch with the ground, you fall. The leader who forgets whom he serves loses his legitimacy. Solomon became a pharaoh, the same type of tyrant his ancestors had fled from. Success isolates you. You start flying in private jets, eating in exclusive restaurants, living in gated communities. You forget how much a liter of milk costs. And when you forget the reality of common people, you make stupid and cruel decisions today. Keep your feet in the mud. Do not believe your own divine legend. By staying connected to the struggles and joys of those who support your throne, you maintain the human perspective necessary to rule with justice. A king who cannot feel the heartbeat of his people is a king whose days are numbered, for he rules a world he no longer knows. The Rehoboam syndrome, the failure of succession. Here is Solomon's greatest tragedy. He was a great king, but a terrible father. He was so busy ruling the world, writing books, and attending to ambassadors, that he did not educate his son, or perhaps he gave him everything too easily. There is an Arabic adage, "My grandfather rode a camel. My father rode a camel. I drive a Mercedes. My son drives a Land Rover. His son will drive a Mercedes. His grandson will ride a camel." Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. Solomon, a strong man, created good times. Rehoboam, a weak man, inherited those times and destroyed them. Rehoboam was a daddy's boy. Arrogant, disconnected, useless. If you build a financial empire but raise useless children, you have failed, because your empire will die with you. Solomon did not teach the code to Rehoboam. He gave him the gold, but not the manual. The best legacy you can leave is not money, it is hunger and values. If you take the hunger away from your children, you castrate them. By insulating them from the friction of reality, you deprive them of the opportunity to forge their own ring of power. A dynasty is only as strong as the character of its next link. If you do not invest in the soul of your heir, your gold will only fund their downfall. The Solomon paradox, practicing what you preach. Modern psychologists have coined the term the Solomon paradox. It refers to the ability to give wise advice to others about their problems while making disastrous decisions in one's own life. Solomon saw clearly the problems of two prostitutes, neighboring kings and merchants. But he was blind to his own errors and his own ego. Why? Because the ego creates a blind spot. When you are emotionally involved, you lose perspective. Solomon stopped having counselors of truth. Chapter 4. He surrounded himself with yes men who said yes to everything. No one dared to tell great Solomon, "Majesty, you are wrong, you are drinking too much, you are oppressive." When you eliminate criticism, you eliminate the error correction system. You become a plane flying without instruments toward the mountain. You need a jester. In medieval courts, the jester was the only one who could tell the king the truth through laughter. You need someone who doesn't depend on your money to tell you the truth. If everyone around you applauds, you are in mortal danger. You must cultivate at least one relationship where your status is irrelevant and your flaws are visible. Without an external mirror that refuses to flatter you, your ego will eventually build a reality so distorted that you will walk off a cliff thinking you are flying. The return of Asmodeus, the inner demon. Remember the legend from chapter 1. Solomon controlled the demons with his ring. but at the end of his life, metaphorically, Asmodeus regained control. The vices Solomon thought he had tamed, lust, greed, pride, broke the chains. He realized too late that you never kill the ego, you only keep it at bay. Vigilance must be eternal. Solomon lowered his guard. He got bored. Boredom is very dangerous for high-performance people. When you no longer have external challenges, you already conquered everything. The brain seeks dopamine in internal chaos. You start playing with fire just to feel something. Solomon began to worship dark gods Moloch, Chemosh, out of boredom. Whether out of intellectual curiosity, theological boredom, or to please his wives, he opened the door that should have remained closed, and the darkness entered. By inviting the lower frequencies back into his sanctuary, he collapsed the magnetic field of his protection. The demons he once commanded became the masters of his final days. Repentance, Ecclesiastes as a testament. However, Solomon did not die as a total villain. His redemption was his final honesty. He wrote Ecclesiastes. Imagine Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos writing a book at the end of their lives saying, "All my money is trash, my rockets are vanity. The only thing that matters is to love and live the present." It would be a shock. He did it. That is what Solomon did. He had the courage to confess his emptiness. He had the courage to tell the world, "I have climbed the highest mountain, and I tell you, there is nothing at the top." Happiness was not there. Happiness was in the valley, in the simple things I despised. This book is his true legacy. It is his final gift. Thanks to his fall, we have the map of the precipices. His failure is our lesson. You don't have to make Solomon's mistakes. He already made them for you. You can learn by wisdom, reading the map, instead of by experience, falling into the pit. His final words are the ultimate key to a life that is not just rich, but meaningful. How to avoid the fall, the maintenance protocol. You are going to succeed. Assume it. Now, how do you protect yourself from the curse of Solomon? Here are the four laws of sustainability. 1. The day one law, beginner's mindset. Jeff Bezos has a rule at Amazon. It's always day one. Day two is stasis, followed by irrelevance, followed by death. Never stop being a student in this life. The day you think you are an expert, you stop learning. Solomon stopped learning. He thought he already knew everything. Always maintain the humility of the white belt. Even if you are a millionaire, keep studying, keep asking, keep serving the coffee if necessary. Never believe you are too good to do the basics of your craft. 2. The law of pruning, continuous minimalism. Success brings complexity. More things, more people, more commitments. Complexity kills. You have to prune your life regularly. Every 6 months, eliminate what is excess. Close projects that don't work. Fire toxic people. Sell things you don't use. Cancel subscriptions today. Return to simplicity. Solomon died suffocated by his own complexity. 1,000 women, thousands of chariots, infinite bureaucracy. Travel light. 3. The law of the successor, the legacy. Do not wait until the end to teach your children or successors. Involve them in the process from the beginning. Let them see the sweat. Let them see the problems. Let them learn the code. Do not give them the fish. Teach them to fish, and more importantly, teach them why we fish. Transmit values, not just objectives. If Rehoboam had understood the heart of David and Solomon, he would not have been a tyrant. Build character, not just bank accounts for them. 4. The law of return to the source, real spirituality. Never disconnect the cable from the source. Solomon stopped praying in the temple and started doing empty rituals. Your success does not come from you, it comes through you. Keep your spiritual practice sacred and untouchable. It is your anchor in the storm of ego. It is your anchor. If the ship becomes very large and the anchor is very small, the storm will sweep you away. As your success grows, your spirituality must grow in proportion to hold the weight. By staying grounded in the infinite, you ensure that your temporary empire does not become a prison that separates you from God. The end of the story. Solomon died and was buried in the city of David, his father. He left behind stone temples that were destroyed by the Babylonians years later. He left behind gold that was stolen by Egyptians and Romans. He left a divided kingdom that never reunited. From a material point of view, his legacy failed, it turned to dust. But from the point of view of wisdom, he triumphed. He left us the code. He left us Proverbs to learn how to live. He left us Ecclesiastes to learn how to die. He left us the Song of Songs to learn how to love. The final warning is this. Do not try to be God. You are a man or a woman. You are limited in your human form. Accept your limits. Enjoy your kingdom, but remember you are a tenant, not the landlord. The true king is time, death, and the mystery that dwells behind everything. Bow before that mystery, and your crown will remain firm. Rise against that mystery, and you will be dust. The Code of Solomon is now yours. Rule wisely.
Rule wisely. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you guys have enjoyed. I hope you guys have enjoyed, and I hope you guys have learned so much. Like, for me, I'm like in awe. I'm like, wow, guys, reading is nice, né? Especially when the matriarch is forcing you to read in the middle of the night. But all in all, ladies and gentlemen, let's see you again tomorrow, same time, same place. I love you forever and a day.